Hey, you, wake up. It's Saturday morning, and it's time to jump on that to-do list. But that home improvement project doesn't have to be a chore. Tune in here to About Your House to listen and learn from the most experienced and reputable contractors and service providers in the industry. About Your House is brought to you by PutToolsInSchools.org, connecting students to tools of the trades and raising awareness of the many career pathways. Also, About Your House is brought to you in part by Carolina Foundation Solutions, a licensed general contractor in North and South Carolina. From the hills to the coast, if you have a problem, they have a solution. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some time with us as we spread a little love. And now, here's your host, Ray Terry.
Welcome to another beautiful rainy. I said beautiful rainy. No such thing. At any rate, a nice, beautiful Saturday morning in the big Queen City. Yeah, it's going to rain today. It's not raining really hard right now, but it's going to around 1 o'clock or so. So it's going to be a little rainy afternoon, but who cares? You gardeners out there, it's a welcome sight. It's time to rain on your garden. Make things grow. Yeah. I'm looking forward to today's show because it's just neat. It's kind of, we're going to talk about a lot of things and things that I'm kind of different to me, but yet exciting because it is different. I like different things. I do not like status quo. I do not like to be in a box and don't tell me I can't do something. You know, well, today's show, we're going to be outside the box a little bit in conformity to typical residential construction, totally outside the box. We've got, I'll introduce you my guest by name, Dwight Morgan. He's with AllSiteTech. And then I met Dwight through Charlie Dunn. Charlie Dunn's with DPR. DPR, right. DPR Construction. What's DPR stand for?
Doug, Peter, and Ron.
See, that's easy, wasn't it? DPR Construction. Now, I don't know these guys in depth, although I've met them both and we've had conversations. I got to tell the story how all this started. You know, I told Dwight earlier, and good morning, guys. Thanks for coming.
It was another beautiful rainy day.
Yeah, it was. It was that.
I never end up where you're about to tell the story, had it not been for the rain. So
really? Cool.
I didn't want to fight traffic, so I said, let's stay in the time. Country and not get on the main roads.
I was up in the Oakdale community at a meeting. I had an interview up there, so I was up in that area, Beatty's Ford and Roswell's Ferry or Mount Holly Huntersville Road area. And so I said, hey, I'm going to do a little plug here. I was near Lancaster's Barbecue, which is up on Beatty's Ford Road, about a mile or so above Mount Holly Huntersville Road. You know, it's up on the right. Good food. Great. They got a great menu.
Some of the best catfish you'll ever have.
Yeah. You can't go to a restaurant and get catfish like Lancaster's has up there. And I checked it out. Charlie, I went back. I think it was last week I was up in the neighborhood, so I said, let's go by. And it just says fish dinner. I says, what kind of fish? He says, catfish. I said, there you go. But anyway, so I wheeled in there to have dinner, and then dude comes and sits down next to me. Well, actually, two seats away, and that was Zach. Zach showed up, sat down, and got up, left, came back, and then about 5 minutes later, this tall man named Charlie Dunn showed up, sat down beside me. Well, I never mind my own business. I got to, you know, talk.
He polled the whole restaurant about where they were from.
Well, because every time you go in a restaurant, not every time, but a lot of times where people are jovial and can talk, you know, and be neighborly, right? And that bar was that night, right? Pretty lively bunch, you know, everybody. And the bar
just
filled,
about every seat filled.
It was about filled up. So, hey, we're in the mood now, guys. So somebody said, where are you from? Well, the Mount Holly, the cop, the policeman that came in and sat on the other side of me. We got into a conversation. Anyway, but you always hear this comment when they say, where are you from? I say, I'm born and raised in Charlotte. And then again, I said, I'm probably the oldest one in here, too. You know, and I wasn't. But anyway, so I said, well, let's just, he said, you're a rare breed. I said, no, I'm not. Not at all. I said, let's just take a poll. You know, and I said, hey, everybody. And everybody from Charlotte, raise your hand. And what, two-thirds or more raise their hand? Yeah, every time. Every time that, I did it, and I've done that in three or four restaurants before, maybe four or five, I don't know, because I'm just curious, because everybody says, oh, you're so rare. Well, let's check it out and see. And people raise their hand, you know. But anyway, so I met, we were eating, and they were talking about something. And I knew it was industry related because you were showing pictures and this, that, and the other. And I don't know how we got off on what you did.
Oh, it was my house.
Oh, it was?
And Pauly B. Piping.
Okay.
And you had the nerve to say, well, that's not the worst mistake the industry's ever made. I've seen worse.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what
Which
I said,
but maybe it's true, but none that have cost me the way this one's going to cost me.
Oh, yeah.
To repipe a house because some engineer didn't do enough
well,
testing.
You know,
and now
Charlie,
pipes are going to leak.
As you
because
know.
Because there's chlorine in the water in the pipes. Who knew that was a criteria to test for? Yeah, it's a.
But you know, being in construction, you know, through the years, how they've put stuff on us that didn't work. Dwight, you're real talkative this morning. How do we get this guy?
Once he gets going, we're just going to strap in and hold on. Once
okay,
he gets going.
That's kind of what I was hoping for.
I'm just amazed. Between you two, I'm just amazed.
You know, but so we started talking anyway. Let me finish
to loop Dwight in. The reason Zach was meeting me is Dwight had been up here from Miami doing some work at Zach's place.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I was thinking, what's the simplest spot, like halfway between where Zach is and where I am, so I don't have to come into uptown, downtown, whatever you want to call Charlotte,
stay off
of 77 in the rain. So I'm like, well, I'll get Zach to meet me at Lancaster's.
Yeah, and Zach was in my office earlier that day and said, hey, let's go to Lancaster barbecue. And I go, Zach, I just can't break away. Can't break away tonight. I said, you guys go enjoy. So, and then he told me the next day about how great it was.
Well, it is a great place to eat, but it's also a great place to meet people and food. The food's good. They got a little different menu. It's not bar food. It's a restaurant.
Yeah, it's really good barbecue, good sauce.
It's really good food. It's not a bar food place, although there's somewhat bar food, but no. They've got great vegetables, great meals, great barbecue, great catfish. It's just great.
Well, I kind of think we ought to go ahead while we're talking about Dwight a little bit. The reason Zach and I knew Dwight was back in 2020. Or am I getting ahead of you?
No, I don't know where we're going. We're just going. Go.
Okay. All right. So COVID had hit us. We had been working on a project here in Charlotte for Duke Energy, Duke Metro, mm-hmm. 40 floors. How might we do wall panels so that we don't bring as much material into the building, cut it, have to bring it out? You know, that transportation waste getting out of the building is a challenge. So anyway, I'd reached out to a friend of mine who worked at Weber Screwdriving because as we were trying to figure out these panels, getting to both sides of the panel was pain. Like working at the panel, what kind of table could we rotate? And I was like, have you guys seen anything like this? He said, I don't know. Let me check and I'll see how I get back to you.
All metal studs, right? All metal studs construction.
What we do in commercial
metal. Yeah, absolutely. Metal studs. Metal construction.
So it was.
Let me throw a warning out there. We're going to be talking a lot today about metal construction, which is outside the box. Continue.
Agreed. Yes. So I get a call like 3 months later. Hey, Charlie, I think I've seen somebody who solved that problem you're talking about. We just went with a company that's been using our Weber's, and Weber's out of Germany. If automated screwdriving, they do it for
okay,
all kinds of industries.
Okay, the Weber's are the automation. Oh, and we're going to be talking robotics today, too.
Right.
Robotics, because this is why I'm kind of – not why. This is the excitement in all of this. It's this man, Dwight, here. He's a whiz-bang guru intelligent, off the charts kind of dude. Doesn't look it, but he carries some deep stuff in his little brain here. So we're going to get to that in a minute.
Right. Yeah. So he said these guys just had this panel inspected, and Charlotte Mech said it's the best panel quality they've ever seen. The flushness of the screws, the square, the tolerance is phenomenal. So reach
tight,
out.
Tight.
Talk to Dwight, and I immediately understand based on his background, and I'm not going to let him to share that, but I'm like, okay, this is a different individual, like you said, outside of the box. This mm-hmm. is not someone from construction, but he's working on problems that really matter in construction. And so then one of the first people I called was Zach, because at the time, Zach wanted to buy a roll forming machine so we could make our own studs. And I was the guy saying, well, I'm not sure we're ready to buy that.
I haven't heard all this part. Yeah.
So, and but, I mean, he was, because Zach's gung-ho, wants to change the world. He's done some cool things.
We could talk about him for an hour.
Yeah. I mean, he was, he's one of my heroes because I love all things Dizzy. May the 4th be with you guys out there that know what I'm talking about. Now, I'm going to tell them, Ray and Dwight, I walk in this morning and said May the 4th, and they didn't know what I was talking about.
That's correct. We had no clue.
They knew Cinco de Mayo, but.
That's tomorrow. We're cued in on that one now.
I'll rub off on
the
time.
May the 4th be with you. No, Richard now was all in. You know, he knew exactly.
But Zach led the virtual design effort and coordination for the installation of the Pandora land down in Disney.
Yeah, where they showed me pictures.
Yeah, they made up steel. Who's ever done anything like that? Oh, floating mountains.
Amazing engineering. Just incredible.
So anyway, so we get on the phone with Dwight, and we've been talking to Dwight for no more than 15 minutes, and Zach has texted me, I don't think we're ready to buy a roll former. Because Zach is laying down this education, and everybody who goes through offsite tech, and I did it with two architects yesterday morning, they see things and they learn things they haven't seen or learned before about construction.
Yeah. So it blew me away.
Yes. And so then that led to Zach comes up here, we have a meeting, you know, and anyway, so fast forward, still working together, still trying to find the right way to bring the robotics and automation, and I'll, you know, leave that for Dwight to talk about, to construction to take care of these labor challenges, quality challenges.
Well, did he satisfy your needs?
Yes, and they went above and beyond on prototyping some things, but this is where, you know, taking the outside the box.
Yeah.
There's a book, I don't know if you're familiar with, Loonshots, named for the guys that kind of invented the radar that helped us win World War II.
Right.
That somebody in the government said, the people I've got aren't creative enough to get us where we need to be, so I need another group to go do the Loonshot thing
right
to get us radar.
Sure.
And if they hadn't had that Skunk Works thing, war might have been different. Well, I've gone through the same thing in this industry. Dwight's got this Loonshot, but you try to bring it back to the normal in-the-box business, and there's resistance. So we've had some bumps on the road there.
No doubt. After I saw it, hear you, and see the vision, and then put you in the wheelhouse where you're at, it all don't fit, you know, because of the resistance you're feeling.
Yeah, and the construction industry has really been one of the slowest moving to change out of all the industries in the world. You know, if you go and look at automotive, you look at pharmaceutical, you look at food processing, they've adopted technologies to advance the productivity, which lowers the cost. But construction has really never adopted a lot of those new methods. So we knew we were going into always an uphill battle when we decided, Ray, to be outside the box thinkers. And that's really what we've accepted. But honestly, it's been a great ride, and I hope to talk about it sometime today.
Yeah. Well, anytime we enter new frontiers, we get resistance.
Sure.
And because everybody's programmed. And I'm sorry, I said everybody. I don't mean everybody, but the vast majority of the public now have been scammed and led to believe something that's not true. Yep, I said it, because that's what we're going down. Everybody just plays the game every day, and that's what drives me crazy. When I went in your facility, I heard you, but that was prior to going to see it. So I heard it, and I talked to Charlie about it, and you know, and when he told me certain things, of course, I've been playing with this stuff my whole life. And you just made it into a robot.
Yeah, and we all think in pictures, right? So it's great for you to come see it.
Sure.
Because when you hear it and when you see it, different things go on in your mind.
Right.
When you see things.
Right. And so, okay.
And let me just I'll probably say this multiple times this morning.
Sure.
If you're listening to this and you have an interest, or you're thinking something negative – I tell our teams, don't talk about offsite tech. I'm not going to get on the phone and have a conversation with you about offsite tech. You're going to come see it. Because until you walk that floor, see what the automation does, see how the material is staged, see the things mm-hmm. work, you can't, because of where we are in our current box, you can't even imagine what this new thing is like.
I tell you, for me personally, it was hard to wrap my head around. It wasn't hard to wrap my head around. It just took a moment because you're seeing all this stuff, and you can relate it to what I've been seeing and doing, and we collectively in the industry. But all this just changed in a way that makes it like Dwight has refined it. Offsite tech has refined it down to, it's beyond an art. It's very, it's robotics. It's systemized to the max. And what leaves there is a completed living dwelling, completed in its entirety without grout on the walls. And I say that because, am I right?
Correct. You were correct on the bathroom, you know,
and so, you know, you could call it manufactured housing, just like, well, just like modular homes are built inside, right? Very similar but completely different, because robotics couldn't do what, not, it's not the same. It's just.
Yeah, I sometimes use this language. I don't know if this resonates, but there is offsite construction. And that's been going on with modular homes,
forever.
Et cetera.
Right?
There
is
offsite construction.
Sure there is.
But then there is industrial construction.
Right.
That uses modern industrial methods, robotics, automation, precision. That's what's different about this.
Not only is it different there structurally, I was blown away. That's the part that's kind of, you say, wow. I mean, it's metal. It's screwed together. It, you know, it's just totally outside the box. And every screw is the same place on every panel. And you could look on the blueprint and go put your finger on a finished screw, but the screw's really not there. And now, that might not mean a lot, but that's how automated and technologically advanced this is, right?
Agreed. It replaces the use of wood for structural framing, and that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what we've done differently.
We're going to talk all about it. We're also going to talk about Queen City Robotics, an organization here in town. It's actually Queen City Robotics Alliance, and I want to do a plug for them today because it fits the format of what we're going to be talking about. And much more coming your way right here on About Your House. My guest today, DPR Construction. Not really. It's Charlie Dunn. And we'll find out more about Charlie and Dwight Morgan with Offsite Tech. And what's this all about? Well, come on back. We'll talk about it and tell you. You're listening to Fox Sports Charlotte, 94.7 FM, About Your House. Let's put tools in schools. We'll be right back. About industrial construction being well, all right, you made the panels. We're getting back to the story here a little bit of how you got in touch with Dwight. When did you meet Dwight? In other words, you know, you talked to Zach and you knew of a Did you do research and find them?
So we had already spoken on the phone.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Zach was so excited. He said, I'm flying up here to see this. We went and we met. And again, I'm leaving some space here for Dwight to tell the story. But we met at Dwight's business partner, Rick's current business. Saw some work they'd done just based on conversations we'd had. And I think some drawings they'd gotten from Zach on digital prototyping. Because that's another thing that's different with industrial construction. You build it digitally and make some mistakes in the computer first before you go build it with material.
Agreed.
So we had that meeting, and then we went over and saw their current plant, which was 15%, maybe. He didn't have the power he needed for the robots. He didn't have the robots. Yeah.
Yeah, we just moved. I'm from the north.
Oh, how long ago was this?
This was
2019,
he started the plant, but we were there first in 2020.
Okay, that's when it started. Okay. There's a timeline on the website, too, offsitech.com. So keep talking.
And
curious here.
And then I could see the vision because of my background, and we haven't talked about this, but I've spent more time out of construction than in construction, other than maybe one of the most important things I did with my brother is we started a house painting business.
Right.
2 years in high school, we painted for a chemistry teacher.
Right.
And he was crazy. Like, couldn't plan through his day.
Right? I got you.
And we're like, if this
ADHD,
joker,
all
if that guy, if this he guy can make business. Money, we sure can make money, right? So we started Dunn Brothers Painting. At its peak, I was paying 25 people with my own,
Oh, you were a painting contractor.
And I was like, wow, this is, this isn't that bad. And then I realized, I hate painting.
Well, you know, how old were you then, Charlie?
I was, and part of it was never full time because I was in school and grad school.
Oh, okay, so you were going to school.
Right, but summertime it would go to full time. And again, it let me get out of school debt free, but I just woke up one day and I'm
like,
okay.
You just made money painting to get through college.
Yeah, I figured out I could
do this. What'd you do in college? What'd you take? What's your background?
I studied creative writing with a minor in public speaking.
My dad
taught political science at Clemson University.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to a small liberal arts college, Bob Jones University.
Okay.
Which is, I've been both grateful, and then I've had some things to work through as I've gotten older. But it gave me space. And the path there was in high school.
Right.
I don't know if you remember a fellow, Rick Barnes. He's still around as a basketball coach. But he was Clemson's coach. And he went to Texas and Tennessee, and it was controversial when he left Clemson. His wife made a comment about being glad that she was moving to a better school district. And, it was an unfortunate comment to be publicly aired. Clemson had a great elementary school, but the junior high and high school is not great.
Right.
And it's different, North Carolina, South Carolina.
Oh, I know it is.
Different.
I know
so,
it is.
And so my dad was concerned about that, so I came to Bob Jones not for faith reasons, but for the private school, high school reasons, which let me do a lot of different things.
Sure.
And the other thing I've told people that I really believe, if you can be in any environment like that, where most of the people, kind of where you were headed, think the same way.
Sure.
And you think differently.
Right.
Then you've learned something very important. Mm-hmm. And that was me. I was there, but I did not think like the
majority
of...
You were outside that box.
Right.
Yeah. I've always been outside that box. And I wondered about it. I didn't really realize I was till you get older. Did you? No. You just knew something just was different.
Right.
And and by the way, your voice, you got that.
Yeah, and I get that from my dad, and so that's the thing.
But he's got that,
My dad is political science. He's one of the first people in the country to figure out how to use math to predict elections. And, of course, South Carolina was early bellwether state, so reporters always wanted to talk to him. Like, Today's Show has been in our home setting up to interview him.
I got you.
Wolf Blitzer would call, and I'd pick up the phone, and he'd start asking me questions.
Because your
voice.
And
I'd say, hold on. you want to talk to my dad?
Yeah,
and
no, so, I'm not the dude. I'm not the guy you want to know.
So I warned my dad. I'm like, hey, if I'm ever angry, I'm going to give a reporter a whole stinking mess.
That's
you'll never get to explain your way around from that. But, and I had the benefit, too, I say this, to be able to play sports. This is another benefit of being in a small school with some freedom. I'll say this in –
Well, you
I had
could
teachers
fit,
there.
He could be on the football field or basketball court. Keep talking. I'm sorry. I just said.
But I didn't. I wasn't. And I almost think, too, I was one of that last generation to really enjoy sports before it became almost like a profession for these kids.
Yes.
Where you had to pick a sport and
play it year-round.
That's
why I hate sports now. Yeah.
But
they monetized it and made it something and just blown it out of the water for me anyway.
But it gave me a chance to do that, to do competitive debate, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, really?
And I don't tell many people in construction that, honestly. This may be the first construction setting where I've said that out loud. So
I never knew it.
I guess. Anyway. But and what that taught me is I can research almost anything and become an expert. And that's maybe why I really clicked with Dwight.
Communication is that heavy. And I tell people this all the time. The number one key to ultimate success is being a great communicator. And if you can communicate well, you can go anywhere you want to go with your passion. Does that make sense?
And you don't have to be the smartest person
no,
in the room.
No.
You just need to have a communication skill set that people want to work with you. Because
and
if
hear
you build
you.
A team around you, you can get things done, right? You're not going to get it done by yourself. Construction is a great industry. It's never an individual sport in construction.
There's no, correct me. Okay, guys, come on. We've all lived here a little bit. Yeah. Tell me what you can do by yourself. Be by yourself.
Be by yourself.
That's it. You can, in this world today, like never before in my whole life, it's impossible to get anything done by yourself and do it well.
No, I think one of the key words that has become part of my vocabulary is the word collaborate. It's about collaboration.
Absolutely. I hope Gary's listening. Collaboration over competition. But where are we? We're in Charlotte. We're in the big competitive arena. Are we not?
Yeah, we are. But the winners are going to be those that collaborate best. In terms of all the different skill sets that you need, you've got to piece together a team of those that are specialists in what they do. If it's in construction, you need the best in plumbing, electrical, mechanical, framing, robotics today. It's not just, I'm a great general contractor. I'm a great architect.
Your off-site tech exemplifies what's happening in the bigger picture.
Well, this is a great place, I think, to jump in on this point on competition versus collaboration. Because this will tell some of the struggle I've had in getting people that I work with to appreciate what off-site tech brings. Competition is not a problem as long as we know who the real enemy is.
Yeah.
So I'm competing to solve this global construction productivity problem that's probably at least a $2 trillion annual drain on the economy. That's my competition. But I had people who saw off-site tech and Dwight as competition. And Dwight didn't show up as competition. He wanted to help. He wanted to find the right place to fit in. But that's where I think competition becomes a problem.
We don't know
who the enemy is.
There is none. You've opened up a new frontier.
Look, the competition
to me,
would you
agree with that, Charlie?
Yes, but to the what this I've learned this because one of the things I really go after, and I do it in an emotional way now when I do industry events, I go after waste. And I want people to feel the pain of waste. And I do a simple thing where we build a Lego house, and it's stressful, it's chaotic, and then we do better planning, and then it's calmer. But then I make people stand up in the room with their finished Lego house, and I say, what's our current waste average on a job site? Material. It's 30 to 35%, depending on how you study it. Copper that should be more precious than gold, because we've got less than 5 days in the global supply chain at any one time. We're still at 20%.
We're five days out global supply chain on copper.
Yeah, sometimes it bumps down to like 2 days in the supply chain. Like people don't realize how close we are to
running out of critical resources.
Yes.
I mean, if you look at running out of things, right, the U.S. today has a minimum of 2.5 million shortfall in single-family homes. 2.5 million. Now, you could argue that it's more like 7 million missing homes. But that gap from 7 to 2.5 is bridged by apartments. If you're in Charlotte, you see all the apartments going up, the multifamily projects. But at the most part, how do you bridge the gap if you continue to build the same way you did 20, 30 years ago? How do you bridge the gap of new household formations versus what you can build?
Coming back to this waste, because this is the other – it's not just that get it built, but the point I make in that room is – what that means, that material waste, it means every time we build two projects, we put the material for a third project in a dumpster.
In a dumpster.
And I make them throw their Lego house, 1 out of 3, in a dumpster in front of the room. And I've had guys cuss at me. I've had people cut in line so they don't have to throw their toy house away. I'm like, what's wrong with us? we're in this room emotionally attached to this little toy we just built. But we'll go to the job site, and we'll the first thing we roll out is the dumpster, and we fill it up. And then we're so messed up, we pat ourselves on the back because we get lead credit for filling the dumpster sometimes. That was a shocker for me with drywall. We put 90 tons of drywall into dumpsters.
Jeez.
At a Penn State business school. This was new construction. And we got lead credit. That's why we knew that was the tonnage. Because every bit of drywall board that went into the dumpster was going to go somewhere to get recycled, which still uses in this,
energy.
And that's why I'm so excited about the Dwight's ability to drive that waste down. Because in manufacturing, it's 1% to 2%, right? It's world class. You can get below 1%.
The technology involved with what Offsite Tech is doing is absolutely staggering to me. You know, the technology in it, because, and we ain't even talked about it yet. You know, it's just mind-blowing because you go in. First of all, I went in the plant, and the first thing I saw was the rolls of steel, rolls of metal, big rolls of metal. And there sits your framing in the floor with various gauges and various thickness, the widths and whatever. And, you know, so I'm going to move to Dwight here. First of all, where are you from?
I am from the city of New York. I am from Queens, Brooklyn, New York.
Gotcha.
And I went to college upstate New York at Cornell University as an engineer. I'm a mechanical and aerospace engineer. I grew up on the approach path to JFK Airport, and I saw airplanes fly over my house at 800 feet every 2 minutes. And I had this dream when I was growing up. I said, I want to design those planes. My dad was an immigrant from Jamaica, and he was in the automotive business. And much like Charlie's story about painting, you know, my dad wanted me to be in the car business with him. And I started working with him during my teenage years, and I realized I hate cars. I just don't like car business. And it wasn't because about the car itself. It was about dealing with the public and how they loved their cars, right? They loved their cars and their pets sometimes more than their wives and their kids. And it was a tough and unique environment to learn it. So I ended up going to engineering school. And I got an engineering degree from General Motors. At that point, I'm sorry, an engineering scholarship from General Motors. And I went to work in the automotive industry, which was the robotic implementer.
That's where the robotics started.
Yeah, that's where it started. It started out in what they call the 3 Ds, you know, dirty, dull, and dangerous jobs. That's how they said we're going to go after robotic implementation. And then it changed from there.
So you were involved or in the automotive industry when robotics moved into it, and you were a part of that transition.
Agreed. There was a big thing between the U.S. automotive industry and the Japanese industries, the Toyotas of
the world.
In terms of price per vehicle and quality per vehicle. Back there in the 80s, there was this commercial that you'd remember putting a ball bearing on a car and watching it roll down the gaps between the hoods and the doors, and that was the Toyota sign of perfection. And GM decided to start a robot company. They said, we have to own this application so that we the automotive industry, get what we need out of it. And they went after this, and they started a joint venture. And I was the sixth employee of this joint venture that they formed. And it was an amazing ride because they didn't know which direction robotics were just going to go in. They just know they wanted to be in the business. So they started the robot company.
And I year was that?
That was 1982.
Wow, okay.
1982.
Okay.
And, yeah, we did a lot of work in automotive, but one of the key things I realized in that was I wanted to be in the non-status quo applications. And automotive was status quo at the time, you know, dirty applications, dull, dangerous. But there were these other industries out there that had been basically ignored in terms of robotics. And there were things like electronics, food processing, you name it. And that was what I spent my time on, was those non-automotive applications, one of which was construction. And that's, in fact, one of my first patents was in an automatic screwdriver.
One of your first patents?
One of my first patents was for
an automatic. How many you got?
You know, I really don't know the count. I believe it's somewhere just south of 10, probably about 10 patents. But it was an automotive screwdriver.
I told you smart. I wasn't kidding. God, I've seen what this man does. His toys. Wow.
So as you know, the years went on, we got involved in lots of different application right. industry, such as we did work with Tyson Food using robots to debone chickens. Who would think that in the middle of Arkansas, there's a factory in the United States where there's robots deboning chicken, right?
Who would have thunk? I didn't know that.
So as we went through this, we came up with this idea and said, as we were going through industries that were non-automotive, that could benefit productivity-wise, quality-wise, safety-wise using robots, we came across one of the last frontiers to do adoption of robotics. And guess which one it was?
Construction.
And what we had learned through all of the other industries we went after was it wasn't about just throwing a robot in to take some person's job. That's not what this is about.
Well, and that's kind of one of the big points to this show today, folks, how we've all heard the BS. I'm not going to say those words. I'll get, you know, but it's total BS of how robots are going to take humans' place.
Yeah.
They will. In some respects, but they also have to be maintained, these robots, and taken care of, programmed, dealt with, all the and improved, as this man has done. So carry on.
Yeah. So one of the first projects we did as we started our factory was with DPR, and it was to do a expansion of a hospital.
Were you with DPR then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
It was an expansion of a hospital.
Because that's after you found him.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they brought us
projects. You just said something. I find people. Like, it's hard for me to describe what I do, but that's one of the things I do is I find people.
That works.
And when they're good people, I remember. And
sometime
down the road,
you
connect.
That's what
you
do. You find good people because you don't want the bad ones. Oh, you got to go, dude. You're one of them bad ones. I don't want to play with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so one of the things that our very first project with DPR was during COVID. Actually, during the COVID, there was a hospital expansion underway. As we all know, that particular pandemic, a lot of hospitals were tapped out of capacity,
and there was
one down in Atlanta that DPR was expanding from, let's say, 3 to 6 floors, and there was an application at the very, very top called a cornice, which is the overhang at the end, and they wanted to make about 1,000 pieces of prefabricated light gauge steel cornice assemblies, and they brought it to us, and when we looked at it, it had 83 fasteners, 83 screws that had to be put in for every cornice. So we did the math. It's 83,000 fasteners. So we looked at our guys at our factory and said, does anybody want to volunteer to put in 83,000 screws by hand? There were no volunteers, but guess what? The robots volunteered. They just did what they were told to do. So that's how we carve out applications because
they don't want to do
83,000 screws.
That would have been dudes on scaffolding, 6 stories in the air, driving 83,000 screws.
Risking their lives, right?
They're going to be up doing it. Okay.
And think about this. It's a hospital. It never closes. So not only are they up, but there's people down. Doctors, patients, families of patients that are now in a dangerous zone because guys and gals are working at 6 stories up, trying to put 83,000 screws in. So we did it at ground level in a factory, and we saved DPR about six weeks of work because they actually came prefabricated and all they had to do was hang them.
You crane them.
Just crane them up.
Oh, and they were packaged beautifully on pallets with the lifting rigs on the pallets ready to bring them up. Yeah, it was beautiful. It was, like you said, it was artwork, not construction material.
Yeah, that's – did you feel good?
We didn't know what we didn't know about the business at that time. We really didn't know what
we
were getting ourselves
into. Like,
so look, we realized.
I bet you it's high five.
No, this is
no, you're on the ground. I love when a plant like that would come together.
One of my first times walking through Dwight's plant, he said, "Charlie, he goes, I've solved harder problems than this."
Yeah.
Like the Tyson story. What he didn't tell you was, it wasn't that Tyson wanted robots to debone the chicken. Tyson wanted to get more chicken out of every chicken. They wanted to quit throwing away so much meat, and they wanted to see if the robots could save more meat when they debone the chicken.
Yeah, and they were also thinking about this. As you're carving a chicken, think about what you do. If you're carving them, you're going to get carpal tunnel injuries, right? You're going to get repetitive motion injuries. You're going to also get cut by the scalpel.
Yeah.
So we're not only looking at...
Because we're dealing with sharp blade. You're deboning a chicken, or any meat for that matter, you're going to have a sharp blade. Because I cook and I prepare, and you ain't going to work in the kitchen without a sharp blade.
Yeah, so after going through all these different industries and trying to solve and make their industries more productive, we came across construction. And on one of my customers at the robot company, a company called Autodesk. Now, Autodesk, for those of you who don't know who they are, they're like the Microsoft of construction industry software. That's the best way to describe them. If you're an architect or an engineer,
I've seen Autodesk.
You know
yeah.
Autodesk.
Yeah.
Autodesk.
It's a CAD program.
It's
basically
a CAD program.
Yes.
That designs homes and
sure.
And at the end of the day, they came to us and said, we are going to invest in developing applications for construction. They took an old shipyard repair facility in Boston and turned it into a high-tech think tank for construction robotics, and I was one of their technology partners. We put in some 30 robots in there, and after we sold them, my team sold them to Autodesk, I wanted to go in and see what they had accomplished. And some of the things that they were doing were mind-boggling. And I came across one of the applications, which was metal stud framing. So long story short, I decided, look, I'm going to start a business using some of the things that Autodesk was working on. And my partner and I, Rick Gidmani, decided in Charlotte, where he owned a lot of land, let's build a factory and show Charlotte and the rest of the world that we can do construction differently.
Was that Rick that showed up when I was leaving? Okay, got it. I met him.
Yeah, so we decided to go ahead and adapt new technologies, new materials, all those things. So we decided to go after it and say, let's build a forever home. A forever home. And let's talk about what that means a little bit later, right?
We're going to talk. After the break, we're going to come back. Interesting stuff, folks. Once again, thanks for coming in.
I really
look forward to this show a lot because it's outside the box. Love it. All right, we're going to take a break, naturally. 704-227-8986 if you have a question. 704-227-8986. Going to have William Ward calling in top of the hour, going to talk about GoFlexi.com. Goes about out. Let's learn more about it, what it's doing, where it's going, and how it can improve our students' lives with choices. So we'll be back. More About Your House coming your way right here on Fox Sports Charlotte. Download the free app. Stream us live. Go on your browser, foxsportsradiocharlotte.com. Podcastradiousus.com. Facebook Live on About Your House Radio's page. We'll be right back.
I want to hear it. I don't have to fear it.
I love the colorful clothes she wears and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle wind on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
Softly smile, I know she must be kind.
All right, welcome back. I've got Dwight Morgan, Offsite Tech. Industrial Construction, as well as DPR Construction's own Charlie Dunn. Yes, Charlie Dunn's in the house. Where are you from?
I grew up in a little town, Clemson, South Carolina.
Oh, you're okay.
I was born in Central Illinois.
Right.
My dad was teaching political science at University of Illinois.
Okay.
And he got a call from a school he'd never heard of about starting a political science department, Land-Grant A&M School. So moved down there. You know, I was 1.5 years old. So grew up there.
Gotcha.
It's a great place to grow up. Backyard was how far could I ride my bike in a day.
I got you. Right.
A lot of good opportunities. Yeah.
I hear you. Dwight, how old are you?
I am 62 years old.
62, okay. You moved to Charlotte when?
Just before COVID, 2019.
I was going to say, you're a newbie.
Yeah, I'm a new guy. I'm from the automotive automation alley. That's where I came from.
You're from up north.
Up north in Michigan State.
You like it in Charlotte?
I love it. I never knew what it was to live in the South.
What brought you here? Was it industry?
It was to start this business, Offsite Tech, with my business partner. You know, we agreed that he had land here.
He had land here. So it was a logistics thing more than anything.
Yeah.
And you had the foundation land.
Yeah, we had
you got to start somewhere.
We had to do a proof of concept. As Charlie indicated earlier, you know, the construction industry has had a tendency to do things the same way. Mm-hmm. And when you want to work outside the box in a very slow-moving industry in terms of change, mm-hmm. you'll get a lot of no's. People will say, I don't want to try this out-of-the-box idea because it's perceived risky. Or it's not the way my grandfather did construction, so I'm not very interested in
right.
it.
Oh, right? Men are terrible to change. And the biggest thing I've found about men is I'm pretty harsh. I don't mean to be critical, but they're idiots. About certain things. And Charlie, Bob, every time I say that, men will bob their head. Yep. Because, am I right?
Look, we...
come on.
The women employees we have are smart, and they change the bar upwards for the performance.
Here and we go again. I didn't ask for this, but here, see?
We seek out women in construction because, honestly, they just make... For what we do, because we have removed the heavy lifting where men justify why they are in construction because they're lifting heavy things. All of our robots do the heavy lifting. So we bring in and we need smart, organized, intelligent workers. And you know what? For the most part, every woman is that. I hate to say it. They just are. That's, and I know that might sound very sexist, but
no,
I'm sorry.
There's data for this. Harvard and MIT did studies. I never connected this.
So I was stuck in York, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
There's a period in my career where I opened up new distribution centers for Navistar International Truck. And the good old boys in York, I showed up in the building, I knew I was in trouble because everybody was an OWD. OWD is old white dude. we had no Hispanics, no African American, no color in the building, no females in the building. I'm like, man, this is going to be a heavy, heavy lift. And then these guys rolled in from the upper Midwest with some shelving material, and they had been subcontracted, and their subcontract finish date was 6 weeks too late.
Got it.
And they were late showing up, and this was like, I knew our longest path to get Navistar into this building, and they had to get out of a lease in Baltimore, and they didn't want to be held hostage by the union, so we had this to get this. So the guys that put me in the field there, I called one of them. I said, "What am I going to do? You know, what levers do we have to pull? How do we figure out why the subcontract was wrong?" And he said, what's the challenge? I said, well, once this shelving gets going, it's just a lot of small nuts and bolts. Like, it's just a lot of tedious work. He said, can you find some women?
He said, this is not sexist,
but the data on small motions.
Yeah, detail.
So we found this group of ladies. One of them was literally at a restaurant, Puerto Rican lady, and said, hey, do you know some people that want to work? And they came in, and that crew ended up finishing 2 weeks early, which was 8 weeks ahead of the finish date the subcontractor was contracted to.
Right.
And the only problem I had was they liked to play their music loud and it was driving everybody else crazy. And I'm like, you leave them alone. As long as they're hitting their production targets, you leave them alone.
And they made good money doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, dang, that's opportunity, isn't it? Well, you know, that's why women are stepping into the construction field and making great headway. And it's something that one day, and I don't know what took me so long, one day I woke up and said, whoa.
Well, this,
you
this,
know, women are, they kick butt, man. They really can. And then it got to me, like, all the associations, not all, but most, are now run by what? Women. And you find, and now they're in project management. They're out in the field. And they're being electricians and dang good ones, really good ones. So
our automated equipment.
Yeah.
Fairly complex looking equipment. Had to be programmed and set up every day. And then it's run by operators, right? All the programming, the setup every day, it's done by women. They program the task. They hand them over to the operators and say, here you go. These are your style codes. This is your production run. Go do it. And they have everything done exactly the way we intended it to be done. So what's interesting is we create roles that were not there in the industry before. We have technicians that didn't exist in construction before.
That's technology,
right?
Yeah.
We have now industrial safety experts that look at how to interact with robots and humans in a factory. And at the same time, we have quality control, right? We're checking the product to make sure it goes out right. I mean, what we're doing might sound new. It is because of the technology we're using to get it
done. It's just a different application of old technology applied to construction. Hey,
Sears Roebuck kit houses in the 1920s is what we do.
Right.
But at a much more advanced rate. When you could buy a house in the Sears catalog, they would deliver you all of the panels.
I remember. We've got those houses right here down in Chantilly.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'd crawl up in the attics, and even today, those houses.
They still exist.
They're there.
Yeah, we've changed it all to metal.
Little 900 to 1,200 square foot houses back post-World War II.
Correct.
Came back and you ordered a kit for them. Well, that's what we're talking about here, just using the most advanced technology and construction methodologies, right?
That is correct. And materials.
And materials.
Materials and how to put them together.
And, you know, it's just phenomenal. Mr. Ward's gone. Okay, just put him on hold there. Excuse me, folks. I'm just checking my guests coming up. Go Flexi. Just hang around for that. If you've got kids, need summer jobs, or just career pathway opportunities that you're looking for, well, we're going to talk about it. Just hang on. Right now, though, let's finish up the hour with my guest from Offsite Tech, Dwight Morgan, speaking about technology. And, you know, next hour we're going to talk about what he does, what they're doing, what they're producing, what their goals are, because from what I gather, it's pretty wide open to applications that, I mean, those awnings were, that's mind-blowing what y'all did. Just, you took an idea, a concept of what you needed to be done, DPR construction on your job, and you gave it to him, and he just brainstormed it and said, we can do this, and you came up with everything y'all wanted, right?
And we've adapted it to residential construction, because some of the things we do, people see, oh, that's commercial-grade stuff. That's commercial material. That's commercial technology. But we've adapted it to residential construction in Charlotte.
And guess what? From what I've been told, correct me, it's cheaper.
That is correct. And it's faster. As we're sitting here right now, I've got a crew in San Antonio, Texas, and I know this sounds like complete BS, that are framing one home in 1 hour today. They are going to knock out.
They aren't. Technology is. Okay. And that, I gotta call you on that one.
Okay.
They're not, Dwight, I've seen the plan.
Technology-enabled framing, correct.
It's technology-enabled framing with robotics involved. Robotics don't do everything.
That's correct.
They don't do everything. You've got to have human interactive, you know, methodologies involved here, right?
Yeah, yeah. Robots are making construction better.
Yeah.
They're not replacing construction workers. They're
exactly.
Making it better, a better process.
And, you know, in this show, we're going to tell you what the robots do, what they don't do. You know, so you understand that the rumor, the myth that they're going to take humans' place, no. They will in certain applications when it really is better for everyone involved.
Yeah, or safer, right?
That's the better.
Yeah, exactly.
It's safer. You know, it's less wear and tear on the body, but yet we couldn't do all this without human interaction.
Yeah, who wants to put in 83,000 screws, right?
Yep.
I can't.
And you know what? They got this robot with all the screws it needs sitting right there, and it just knows where to put them, and it puts them in the same place every time. That's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And when the studs are made. Make the studs.
Out of recycled automobiles.
Is that where that
comes
from?
That's where that comes from. The metal comes from an recycled steel.
So you not only are you, your waste is totally recyclable, right, to your point, Charlie?
And it's much less than you can capture.
Well, it's much less because you're cutting everything. You don't have waste.
Or the studs they print to length. There's
They're cut. They come off the machine, made, ready to go to put in the wall.
Our waste is less than 1% on the framing.
That's absolutely mind-blowing.
Well, and you just hit on something. I want to give a shout-out to one of your sponsors, ER Services. Andy Harbin came to home yesterday to help me figure out what I might do with this Poly-D problem. But he told me something that I think connects to this very in a powerful and personal way. Andy's had 12 surgeries. We talked about what happened to his body
as a result
in his career as a plumber.
Right.
The things he did, the injuries created, that now we can shift away from these work-related musculoskeletal disorders and have a safe environment where the human doesn't suffer in this way. Yeah.
You want to talk some more about it? We will next hour. You want to do it?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that. Also, William Ward's coming up. Folks, guest on the phones calling in, going to talk about GoFlexSeed.com. I've mentioned it several times. Well, summer's here. It ain't here yet, but we're in 1st of May. School's out at the end of the month. Well, 1st of June, but it's out. Mentally, they're out. That's the way school works. We'll be back with more about your house.
Continue our conversation with Dwight Morgan of Offsite Tech and Charlie Dunn of DPR Construction, talking construction and robotics. About Your House is brought to you by PutToolsInSchools.org, connecting schools to tools of the trade, raising awareness of the many career pathways. Also, About Your House is brought to you in part by Carolina Foundation Solutions, a general contractor in North and South Carolina. From the hills to the coast, if you have a problem, they have a solution. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some time with us as we spread a little love. And now, here's your host, Ray Terry. Welcome back. Hour number two. We're going to talk to Mr. William Ward. If you get him on the phone there, Mr. Richard. Good morning, Mr. Ward. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fantastic, Ray. How are you?
I am great. William Ward is the founder, or you're one of them, of GoFlexi. I brought you on the show today. I'm going to bring him in studio at some point. We're going to talk more about it and get industry involved, hopefully. But I wanted to use this as an intro time to introduce William and to GoFlexi. Can you give the listeners a kind of a rundown of what you did with GoFlexi?
Yeah, so Flexi is a future of work platform, I like to say, that connects 16 to 24-year-olds with their first jobs and help them find their pathways to their future career aspirations. So what we've done with the platform is allow the ability for young people to find all type of work, ranging from gig work to internship, apprenticeship, trade jobs, and any kind of jobs that match their future career aspiration. So that's what we're doing with Flexi, giving people the flexibility and choice to craft their career path into whatever they want it to be.
Now, what is it? GoFlexi.com. That's the URL, right?
Yeah, that's the website, GoFlexi.com.
Now, how this is open to what? How are you going to work this with industry? Can they apply and join, or, I mean, what's your format?
Yeah, so it's open to any type of business. It's agnostic, you know, like I said. So, you know, companies looking to become part of the platform can start on the website. So if you go to GoFlexi.com and go to companies, there is a form that you can fill, and we will contact you and onboard you. And, you know, it can be any type of company, whether it's a trade organization looking to bring people in into their different trades or a traditional job. They can post their jobs on Flexi. And it's AI powered. So all of the young people who are on the Flexi platform create their profile. They specify the industry that they want to work in. And whenever jobs are posted, they get notified. They build their profile and resume right on the platform. And employers are able to see who are who is applying to their jobs.
Okay, and I've got to cover this because I don't want to mislead anyone. And I want to be the word is transparent. Okay, so... you got to make money. Everybody makes money. This is not a free ride, okay? And I'm just going to throw that out there. Who pays the price, the student or the companies?
So companies pay the price. So we have two different pricing models. One is the pay-as-you-go. So, you know, you can get on the platform as a company and create your company profile and start posting your jobs for free. And, you know, we don't charge you unless you get matched with someone and you want to hire that person. So once you request an interview with that person and, you know, the person shows up for interview, that's when we charge you. Or you can use our subscription model. The subscription model, you pay one subscription price, and you get unlimited connections to people wanting to do your jobs. Right. So with the pay-as-you-go, it's $20 every time someone shows up for interview, or $20 every time someone shows up for, like, a flexible shift, which a temporary shift. Or you can pay a $400 a month fee for unlimited connections.
Awesome. How long has GoFlexi been up now, William?
Yeah, so we've been up for about 3 years. Coming on this year will make us 3 years since we launched. You know, we've gone through some transitions as a company and, you know, recently just relaunched under the Flexi brand in December of 2022.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad to know about it, and that's another resource for our youth, our students in the Charlotte area, to find employment over summer, be it part-time, full-time, or an entry-level position, or just work to give you some money and, you know, a better life as a teenager and or young adult. So in, it's not limited to one area. It's open to all areas of employment, right?
Correct.
Super. That's awesome. If and we're going to promote you here because kids need to know of those resources, and we're also going to post GoFlexi on puttoolsinschools.org as a resource for our youth as well. And I appreciate what you're doing, William.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Ray. And I appreciate what you're doing to, you know, creating awareness for kids to get hands-on experience with, you know, different types of trades and jobs. I think that is really needed.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And, folks, that's GoFlexi.com, GoFlexi.com for employment opportunities. And you industry people out there looking for kids and employment, there's an avenue of approach for you. It doesn't fit everybody, but it's certainly an avenue of approach. And I appreciate you, William. That's GoFlexi.com, and thanks for taking your time calling in this morning.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you for having me.
Have a great day. We will talk again and get you in the studio. I'm going to get Michael Realign and you both in here. Is that okay?
That's fantastic. I appreciate it, Ray.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, William. Go have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you. I want to say this right now, and I've been in the industry, construction industry, 54 years, but just not the construction industry. There has never been a time in my life, in my career, just as an adult, where there's more opportunity than there is right now. Right now. But, you know, and it's not, don't chase money. Chase the opportunities. Chase your purpose. Chase your happy, you know, because if you're chasing money, you'll never get there. Never. But if you find your purpose and you find your happy, and I say that a lot, and I've even heard people say, oh, that's ridiculous. Why would? No, it's not ridiculous. You a happy man?
I am. I love what I do.
You like what you do?
Absolutely.
I know. See, and it makes life so much easier because it's fun, you know.
Work's not work when you love what you do.
No, it's not a job, and that's the word I hate. Overall, is I'm going to my job.
Because that puts you in a box. I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Like, the last thing I've ever wanted to do is be defined by some external thing.
Right? Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, but anyway, there's a lot of opportunities. This week alone, I've had probably 3-4 conversations with people about their lives. And how they want to change, how they're curious about going into this or going into that. And right now you can kind of pick out what you want and where you want to go, because there's not a company I've talked to in the past 2 years that doesn't need help or people that care. And now, because if you do and you can pick and choose and go where you want to go, wow, what opportunity.
That's how we started the business. You know, when we came down to Charlotte because of the opportunity, because we had land down here with my business partner, which is my co-founder for Offsite Tech, we said, let's change construction, right? And everybody says, well, why did you want to change construction? And I said, well,
because nobody's doing it.
And it's no longer affordable, right? How can the affordability for single-family homes was out of reach for the population.
The affordability of cars is out of control. Yeah. And out of reach of normal. Here's what irks me, and I'm going to go off a little side street here. In this country, you're forced to buy top drawer materials when it's ridiculous. Why are you forced to? Because that's all they're offering you. Go to Mexico, buy a Toyota. You'll get one with a rubber mat, brand new, off the showroom floor, rubber mat, 4-speed, a clutch is in the floor. You don't find that America. Oh, by the way, and all the rent windows crank up and crank down. There are no power windows. Why can't we get that in America? Why can't we buy that? Because they don't offer it. Why? They want your money. They're forcing you to buy whatever they put in the store.
Well, Ray, I like that idea, because one of the things that we do to cut costs, it's not just about robotic automation, meaning labors of, you know, robot costs less than humans. It's about how we bring materials in. We source our construction materials from overseas, where we can buy what that market offers, but to U.S. standards in terms of construction standards. So we're not making material that's substandard. We're buying industry-approved construction materials from Malaysia, from China, from Russia, from Ukraine, wherever. We're finding the best country that makes a specific construction material.
One of the things I heard about Dwight Morgan here is he's frugal. He's very frugal. But when I was when you were doing your presentation, the frugal popped out all the time. Because he said, no, I found the best price. This unit costs this. This unit costs that. You know, because you're sourcing this stuff,
yeah,
to get the most efficient, cheapest, not cheapest in quality. You're going after quality.
Yeah, absolutely. What we do as well is we find the best manufacturers around the world that manufacture construction materials for the U.S. market. We then reach out to them. These are the same companies that sell to Home Depot and Lowe's. So we know that it has been fully vetted as being a good manufacturer.
Good resource.
Yeah, so we go to them and say, hey, how would you like to build for us the same or similar products using your same or similar manufacturing process? And what we found out is we can buy direct from those factories at the same price that Home Depot and Lowe's buys.
If
guess
not
what?
Better.
And we don't have to put that profit into it for retail sale. So we buy at a manufacturer's wholesale rate the same products that everybody buys to do home do-it-yourself projects on flooring and windows and construction materials.
And here's the thing about Offsite Tech. They're building complete modular housing. And I said complete. Complete. That means when it goes out of the building in this state, it's got everything in it done, meaning electrical, plumbing, flooring,
windows, doors,
siding. Everything is done except grouting the tile.
And it
when
looks
tile good. Is involved.
Yeah.
And it's first class top drawer done. Now, what does this require in labor? Robots aren't doing all that plumbing. They're not doing all the electrical.
Agreed.
They're not doing some of the component assembly because robots can't do it all. Not yet.
That's a good point.
Not yet. So you need – what do you need?
There's
a lot of employment opportunities.
Right now, our framing technology, which is a structural frame, is the most automated process we have.
Right.
And so we build our own studs. So we have machine operators that run those computerized machines. And after the building is framed, which is only about 25% of the job, and some offers say it's 20 or 25, we then have to do the finishing. We have to put the frame together, et cetera. So we're looking at plumbers, electricians, HVAC technicians, all of those is what we're looking for. To work in our factory, safe, no weather bars, we can work inside.
Yeah, and you don't have weather to worry about. That's a tremendous, and I thought about that early on with modular homes. With no weather, wow, it's got to be built better. Got to be. Just makes sense. All right, we're going to take a break here. 704-227-8986, the number if you do want to call, have a question. Very unique discussion we're having today, out of the box, industrial construction. I got DPR Construction's Charlie Dunn and Dwight Morgan from Offsite Tech. Come back. Let's learn something.
Yes, I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. Karen, she's a silver sun. You best walk her away and watch it shining. Watch her watch the morning come. A silver tear appearing now. I'm crying, ain't I? No doubt in no one's mind that love's the finest thing around. Whisper something soft and kind. And hey, babe, the sky's on fire. I'm dying, ain't I? I'm gone to Carolina in my mind.
All right, welcome back. Talking industrial construction today. Dwight Morgan up at Offsite Tech, a new methodology in building homes. You know, we were talking about materials and, you know, substandard versus, you know, in residential construction, and I'm going to say this, one of the things that really gripe me is that this is my problem. I don't mean it offensively to any builder out there. You build what you can build, but the methods of construction we're using in some subdivisions now just is appalling to me. They all look the same. They're all the same material. They're almost identical. I said almost. They vary a little bit. They got vinyl siding. They've got flush gables. There's no lookouts. It's just, it's so, to me, it's just.
Vanilla box.
It's yucky. And, you know, with, now I'm not saying that's any different on a housing development you may do or be involved with, because there, again, consistency in design or difference in design is more expensive, you know. But the fact is, it's all wood. It's not as good as what you're doing or building, because you're building with metal, steel.
Yeah, we build with steel studs, and one of the benefits of that, it's actually not one of the benefits. It has many benefits. One of them, it's very sustainable. Steel is the second most recycled material on this planet. You know what the first one is, Ray?
Paper.
You know
I'm
what?
Guessing.
I was thinking paper. I was also thinking, when they asked me that question the first time, plastics? Well, first of all, it's water. Every time you turn that faucet on,
yeah.
Water. So number one is water. Number two is steel.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So we take recycled steel, which means, guess what? It takes 100 trees, mature trees, to build a 2,000-square-foot home. So, and there are somewhere between 2 million, 2.5 million shortfall in single-family homes. Do the math how many trees have to lose their lives versus how many scrapped cars have to be repurposed into making my steel.
I hear you, because they do. Steel recycling is big.
It is.
It's big.
It's big.
I just recycled a bunch.
So steel lasts, right now the Department of Energy has done a study, and they claim, this is not my numbers, this is theirs, that a steel-framed building versus wood will last 350 years. So if you think about construction over in Europe, where they do mostly block construction, those homes there are expected to last 400, 500 years old. The United States is not even 400 years old, right? So think about it. We are bringing together what I call a forever home. So we're making residential forever homes using commercial-grade studs that are more sustainable than trees. And guess what? Termites don't eat studs. Mold doesn't is inorganic material. Steel is inorganic. Fire, it's a fire-resistive material in steel. And guess what? It's stronger. So as storms get stronger and bigger and more widespread, we have a higher wind load capability and a seismic strength material as well.
And it's screwed together totally, and it's very integral.
Yes.
Very integral, much more integral than wood could be, correct?
Yeah, it's straighter, and it's stronger, it's more sustainable, and it's what I refer to as disaster durable. So let's say that, okay, you don't live on the coast and you don't have to have a hurricane come through your house every, whatever, 5 years or 5 months, whatever the frequency is. But you live in an area where, guess what? As Charlie indicates, he's got a plumbing problem. So he goes on vacation, he comes back, and he finds his walls dripping with water because some plumbing problem occurred. In a wood-framed house, you have got a long-term problem.
Yep.
Your framing is now rotten or nearly rotten, might need to be removed. Your insulation is all full of water.
Yeah.
So we use not only metal framing, but we use closed cell insulation, which is waterproof, so that if there is a leak.
You use closed cell.
Closed cell, not open
foam.
Cell.
Foam.
Closed cell foam.
You use closed cell foam.
We also use mineral wool, which is, again, made from the waste of a steel furnace to make insulation inside the cavity. We use mineral wool, which is formaldehyde-free, recycled insulation. So we go about not just changing the process of building and bringing it into an industrial setting, but we use more advanced materials. So it is what I call an ecosystem, right? Materials, process, meaning the robotic automated process, and last thing, supply chain. So there's like a three-legged stool. Smart supply chain. Buy from the Home Depot and Lowe's manufacturing partners, but buy direct, okay, in vanilla boxes. Just buy all the flooring, the same stuff you can buy at Lowe's, but buy it from the manufacturer.
And when he says vanilla, it means not branded.
Yeah, unbranded material.
Unnamed.
And we basically use smart supply chain, building science, meaning the better materials for a forever home. And now some people say, well, okay, you're building in a factory. It's going to look like a modular home, or it's going to look like a mobile home. Wrong. Absolutely not. We have a panelized solution. So, for example, if I give everybody on this call 1,000 yellow Legos and we all say, take pictures tomorrow of what you've designed with it, we're probably going to have 1,000 different designs, but we've all used the same Lego. Right? So we make Legos, which
Dwight, I just got to interrupt you there real quick. Dwight's actually like, I went to the Lego house.
So, Legoland?
No, the Lego house in Denmark.
Okay.
Like
okay.
The town where it started.
Okay, cool.
Well, you'll appreciate this. I don't know if you know the story. But
didn't even know about it.
Tell
us the guy, story, Charles.
The guy that created Lego, first he was doing wooden toys, and his son thought that he would make things more efficient. So he took some toys to the train station, but they'd only put 2 coats of lacquer on them and not 3. His dad said, we don't do that. We're making quality for kids. You go get those toys back. So they got one of those ducks in the basement. So they give you 6 red bricks.
Okay.
With a card that's your specific configuration for those 6 red bricks.
You got to love it.
Those 6 red bricks, they didn't even have a way to do the math to figure out how many configuration opportunities there were. They used to think it was somewhere in the 4 million range. It's over 9 billion configurations that they've come up with.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
mass customization through 6 identical components. So that's what we do. We do mass customization of residential housing by using standard window panels, standard door panels, standard plane panels, standard trusses. So by coming up with this kit, we can mass produce them and then deploy them in like a Lego so that architects and general contractors can configure them to make custom homes. So we're not out here selling a solution to every house is going to look the same like you talked about, Ray. This is every house can look different, but they're all using
the same components.
The same 6 Lego bricks that Charlie talks about, except our Legos are
you got standardized a lot more than 6.
Door panel. Yeah, we've got about 36 components right now that we use, and every month we bring out more components. Somebody says, hey, what about a circular window? Never thought about it. Now we have a panel with a circular window. Hey, what about arched windows? Never thought about it. Let's add an arched window panel to it. So our kit of Legos keeps expanding, and it allows mass customization, but best materials and fastest process.
And you're bringing everything to the warehouse, so to speak. Everything comes in there, applied to the – and when it leaves there, it's either a component or a complete structure.
Correct. Yeah, we either do flat pack modular or we do volumetric modular, right? So if it's stacked, the job we spoke about before the break in Texas – didn't want to ship an entire volumetric finished unit. So we
now you say volumetric, explain.
So volumetric is it's a box. A box of
it's
a volume.
A completed box.
A stack of paper is flat pack, right? So
gotcha.
I could make a box out of 4 sheets of cardboard by putting them together, that's flat packed. Once I put them together into a box with all 6 sides, then it becomes a volume.
Got
so you
it.
Ship
that's
a lot
what
of
I
air.
Thought. I yeah. just wanted
no,
to explain.
No, great point. So we ship a lot of air if we ship volume. So going vast distances from Charlotte to Texas, you can get more on the truck if we ship them flat as flat packed, and then we put the flat packs together. Well, some people might say,
Hold on. I gotta get this all square. So you're sending a kit,
flat
to
kit.
Texas.
Correct.
Now you're gonna send the labor to put it together.
Well, you know that's a great story because we shipped a kit earlier this week for 12 homes to San Antonio.
Because great. You're
right?
Just a great segue. Keep talking.
And we were working with a builder down there who said, send me the kits. He said, but I have never put together a metal panelized house, so send me some of your guys and gals to show me, my guys who were wood people, how to do it.
Awesome.
We said, that's the way you guys are going to do it. Now, let me tell you the funniest part about it. These guys were supposed to catch a flight. My guys, my three leaders. The flight got so delayed that they couldn't get into San Antonio in time, and the other crew of workers were on site. So the general contractor said, hey, Dwight, let's figure out something else. How about we do a Zoom construction. Zoom construction, right? Now, I'm thinking, are you kidding me?
So they didn't make the flight, basically.
My guys didn't make it. They called me at 5 o'clock. They said, we're going to miss the flight. We called the general contractor. He said, let's do it by Zoom. I said, you are an out-of-box thinker, because to me, I would have never thought anyone in construction would say, let's build a house with Zoom.
If you know what you know in construction, you guys know this, you can do that. Because you're in the same vernacular and everything.
So we got on our Zoom call in a little construction trailer at the job site where they were going to build these 12 homes. They had 12 slabs poured, and we sat the leaders together and said, "Okay, we're going to show you step by step how to do this." We pulled up the Autodesk virtual model of the house, as Charlie talked about earlier, and we showed them go to the back corner of the slab. Push it, you know, measure from there across the back, measure to the front. Give me a 3-4-5 triangle. We all learned the geometry. Prove that the slab is squared. These guys are like, yep, got it. I said, you got it? They said, yes, we got it. I said, what next? I said, take this one sheet of paper, lay out all of my panels by number on the floor, and put them together. And I told them, I said, this is going to take you 6 hours the first time. I said, but I promise you, after you do the first one, you're going to get it done as good as my guys here in the factory, which is an hour or 40 minutes to put it up. And they said, no problem. I called them the end of the day. I said, I haven't heard from you guys. I'm getting very concerned. What happened? They said, hey, we're together like you said. We're on the fourth house, and we're down to 1 hour. And we did that by Zoom. So out-of-the-box thinking is not just what we do in our factory. It's what we do when it gets to the job site. So here we have a general contractor who wanted to be out of the box, who didn't cancel the job because we didn't make the flight. He said, no, we're going to find a way when there is no way.
I love that. Okay? That's being resourceful and very determined. That's an attitude that's not out there in big numbers today. And that's awesome.
Yeah. So those 12 houses are now framed.
Okay, so you got a 12-house community?
Correct.
In San Antonio.
A tiny home community.
Well, that's where I want to go with this. Yeah. You said, now, tell me about that little subdivision you got.
Yeah, so
I mean, how did you get there? You know, because this is part of your goal and what you wanted to do in the idea of thinking outside the box is to develop sustainable tiny houses or sustainable living conditions.
Yeah, one of the things that came out of the COVID pandemic is that a lot of people realized that they can live with less. It's that minimalistic. Minimizing
everything. I'm a minimalistic dude. Yeah. I'm one of those minimal.
You know, you go into people's houses, they throw away everything they have. They've got just very basic furniture now. They love minimalistic. But guess what? If housing costs a lot, think about if gas is $10 a gallon. And this country hasn't seen that, but that's pretty typical outside of the country of the United States, right? If gas is 10 bucks a gallon, if you're only driving 5 miles a day, it doesn't matter how much gas is riding, right? If a house is really large and the price per square foot is really high, the math will shop you out of the market. So as you combine minimalistic ideals with the higher cost per square foot of homes, the tiny home movement has come about. People can live in less space. So what we've done is said, let's come up with a great portfolio of tiny homes to address the minimalistic market. And also, there's a lot of unhoused people in every country. I'm sorry, in every state. Look at Charlotte. Drive down Tryon Street in the middle of a rainstorm. They're all huddled up. There's a lot of homeless people. Every night, 550,000 people are unhoused. They live in tents. Some live in there for many reasons. They're not just all drug addicts. They're people who have had hard times. They can't afford houses.
Once you get below a certain area and you get in that area of life, it's hard to get out. You know, I've thought a lot about homelessness in the past 5 years, you know, and it's become more and more, it's rampant.
Yeah.
It really is. And I speak of that many times on the show.
It's not just big cities either.
Oh, no. Yeah. It's everywhere. It's hard. A lot of people are struggling right now, probably more than ever since the Depression. And that's fact. But they're not. You don't hear about it on the news because they don't want to talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about the truth, as y'all, most people well know. The truth is not told, but the fact of the homeless situation being, it's bad.
Yeah, so we build homeless shelters, which are metal-framed, heated and air-conditioned with electricity, sleeping units that are 8 feet by 10 feet, that are deployed throughout cities, in community centers, and then also we scale them up into high-end, middle market, whatever you design to have, tiny homes as well. Okay?
You can cover the gambit.
Yeah, and the tiny home market has become very important in cities like Los Angeles, where the price of land is just unreachable, right? Unreachable. We're talking about an $800,000 house that's 1,100 square feet in California, right? It's going to take 2 full-time salaries just to pay the mortgage. You'll be house poor at the end of the day. So think about this. If you have big lots like you have in North Carolina, Charlotte has adopted an accessory dwelling unit ordinance, which allows you to go into somebody who says, look, you've got this big lot. How about I build a tiny home in the back of it that you're not using? That's now a possibility in Charlotte.
It's a program.
Yeah.
Under 800 square feet? Up to 800?
Up to 800, typically between 400 and 800.
And they call mother-in-law suites or whatever. And there's a program in Mecklenburg County that started here.
Yes.
And it wasn't news. It wasn't broadcasted, really, in a big way. I think they're reluctant to proceed because of property values, this, that, and the other. But, my gosh, what an opportunity.
They also didn't. They were a little hesitant to proceed, in my opinion, because they didn't know what these accessory dwelling units were going to look like, right? So they wanted to make the ordinance such that they fit into the community and they didn't stand out like a garage. So in Mecklenburg County, they have standards to which the ADU has to adapt to, such as size. It's about 35%. It can't be any bigger than 35% of the main home, but it has to have the same look. So if you've got a gabled
architecturally.
Roof, architecturally, it has to look similar that it fits in. So right now, those ordinances and rules and regulations are in place, and we are building these small starter homes, minimalistic in size, for people that want to enter the market at a reasonable price. Because guess what? The land is already there. You're building a piece of building a building on someone else's parcel, so that the barrier of I can't find affordable land to do anything in Charlotte, as an example, goes away, because you're using someone else's land that you're building on, that they're not using the land. So it's a really unique way to get housing affordability. And when you couple it with lower cost factory built forever homes made out of metal framing, we have a solution. And when you adapt it to a smaller size, now you have a solution to give safety, privacy, and I think humanity to the unhoused. They live in a building that looks like a house.
Are you like this San Antonio job?
Yes.
Okay. Was that tiny homes for a program of homeless people? Or, I mean, what was that around?
It was brought to us by a nonprofit who started building homes, affordable homes for the veterans.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And he has a community in Texas for veterans that are oftentimes overlooked. And when they come back, you know, they have great, mortgage opportunities through the VA loan program.
Right.
But they don't know how to go about getting it. So they also have special needs sometimes. When they come back in and they have either PTSD or they have physical, you know, disabilities. So he built a community for the vets. He then said, guess what? I can do this for homeless. And I can also do it for tiny home communities where they're trying to build this. So he's gone from thinking out of the box. His box was veteran home housing. He then said homeless. Now he says affordable housing. So he's adapted his concept. So he built this community with a developer who was looking for rapid, low-cost housing in San Antonio. So they didn't believe it until they saw themselves do it via Zoom, because through necessity, my team couldn't show up to do the actual installation.
And now these homes were still much more affordable. I said that good.
Yes.
I said that eloquently.
Correct.
Being shipped down there. the shipping did not make the price go up to any great degree to defer the bill.
Yeah, to give you an idea, the shipping cost was approximately $3,500 for the truck, and we were able to get 10 units flat packed on that. So we take 3,600 divided by 10 is $360.
Wait a minute, you stacked all those houses on one truck?
Yeah, we did. All of the floors, roofs, and all of it was flat packed. All flat.
All flat packed on one truck on our way to San Antonio.
Yeah, so it was a two truck delivery. And so the average cost for shipping was under $800 if you amortize that over two trucks.
Right, sure.
But if you think about it, if you look at the destination charges on your new car, look at that line item.
Oh, yeah.
They're all about $400 to get it from the factory. So it costs less to get your house to San Antonio than it would have to get, you know, two cars to your house.
That's amazing. 704-227-8986. You're listening to About Your House right here on Fox Sports Charlotte. Got Charlie Dunn and Dwight Morgan in the house talking industrial construction and job opportunities. You're going to do a new plan, aren't you? You're moving.
We are. We're moving north to Statesville.
We'll talk about that too, folks. Come on back. We'll talk about it right here on About Your House, Fox Sports Charlotte.
Don't break my heart. I'll be over at 10, it's only time and again, but you're late. I wait around and then I run to the door. I can't take anymore. It's not you, you let me down again. Baby, baby, try to find a little time and I'll make you happy. I'll be home, I'll be beside the phone waiting for you.
All right, welcome back. Grassroots, right? Yeah, I knew that. Okay, welcome back. Okay, you got it. No problem. Everybody's entitled. We got a question. Richton, someone had a question on Facebook.
Yeah, Janine Nelson said, are there applications available for these tiny dwellings? She said affordable housing is not affordable in Charlotte. Great idea.
Well, we had that conversation in the plant that day in your office, conference room. I said, how's that working in Charlotte? And you've met a few obstacles, haven't you?
You know we did, and I think what I can clearly articulate now is that we met with the municipalities, right, meaning City of Charlotte, Davidson.
Huntersville.
They all have affordable housing challenges. Okay? They all do. And what we presented to them was this idea that I thought was absolutely going to be way outside the box, Ray, that they would have thrown us out of the meetings. My business partner and I were sitting around saying, how do we build affordable housing, right? We said, if you look at it, you have a land price, then you have a land development cost, which is knocking trees, putting an infrastructure, getting it ready to put a house on, right? And then you have the vertical construction and all the finishing. You add those all together and you come up with a magic number. And honestly, we said we want to be able to build a high-quality forever home less than $175,000. Everybody said, you can't do it. And we said, why not? They said, the land in Charlotte is 100 grand. How are you going to do it? So we went to the municipalities and said, how much surplus land do you have that's not bringing you any revenue at all? It's just land that's earmarked for maybe a fire station, maybe a school. But the municipalities hold land.
I know they do.
Churches hold a lot of land that were left to them by parishioners that passed away.
Right.
And farmers have land that they no longer want to farm because they passed it down in an estate and the children don't want to farm. We found that we went to the municipalities and said, hey, how about this? Give us the land for free. I'll build you whatever you want and meet your price target. Now, we expected them to laugh in our face and close the door. Many of the municipalities, specifically Statesville and Hickory, took us up on it.
Yeah, I was going to go to Hickory because you had mentioned that. Yeah.
So right now, outside of Charlotte, and things move slower in big cities, so I'm not trying to allude that they're not going to get this done. But right now, in the smaller municipalities, such as in Hickory and Statesville, they have been willing to partner up on what we call a public-private partnership, where they're the public, we're the private. They give us land either for nothing or at a very reduced price. We agree to build affordable housing and then to put deeds in the property to make sure that investors don't come in, buy it for $170,000, and then flip it for $400,000 next year. So they have deed restrictions. So that is one of our go-to market strategies, is to partner with municipalities, and we are working with Charlotte on that.
Awesome.
We are working.
So it is developing.
It is developing. It's not as fast as we'd like to go, and, you know, but I'm one of the most impatient guys in the world, so I'm not a good measurement on
that. I hear you. I understand that.
But it is underway. It is underway. But the key is the land cost management. Now, if you build a tiny home, a lot of the municipalities are allowing for smaller parcel divisions to make tiny home communities where the buildings are closer together. The setback rules have been modified, so you don't have to have a 10-foot space between every property line. And that is going on because other cities, such as Atlanta, Georgia, have allowed that to happen, and it works successfully. It works successfully.
How many companies, Mr. Connector, how many companies in the country are doing this?
You have a lot in California, and this is something Dwight and I have talked about,
I'm just curious.
Because the housing price is so high in California. But the challenge there is a lot of the companies that are designing a product for California, it's never going to work anywhere else.
Yeah, because their idea of success is going from maybe 800,000 to 400,000, and that's not going to work outside of California.
So I don't know of anybody who's coming in this quality, this aggressive on price. There is also this Western Pennsylvania band of modular building,
agreed,
historically, that has done some good work. But in the Southeast, you have a few things emerging with 3D printing. You have a few things emerging.
Yeah, 3D printing's emerging, no question. But this is a whole different
can of
worms.
But nothing at this level.
Right.
And nothing with metal studs.
And then you have some European firms where they are ahead of us that are, talking about bringing in. But one of the things I've learned in my life, all construction is local.
Yeah.
And that's part of what Dwight and Rick are doing here in Charlotte and in North Carolina. They're getting a volumetric North Carolina license, but learning that local, what works here, and then how might it spread.
Yeah. Well, you're in San Antonio.
And the funniest part of it is we agree with Charlie that it's local, but when we started our business, every job we did was outside of the state of North Carolina. It is just amazing how things happen. Like the very first job was in Georgia for DPR, and now we're doing work in San Antonio.
So that first job, that awning job, was one of your first production jobs.
And we've done work as far as Greenland. We had to barge the panels, and we had to ship them before the end of July.
So you're an international company.
We are.
Wow.
We are.
Now give them time, because this story has a phenomenal tagline on it.
So, we ended up getting a company who said, listen, we need to build an apartment up in Greenland on the permafrost where the land never freezes, right? So you don't build anything conventionally up there because at the end of the day, everything's frozen.
Right.
And the frost line is like 10 feet deep. Right, so you can't dig that deep. So they build on the permafrost, and they said, hey, we're going to build in light gauge steel. And since construction season ends like in August, September because of the weather, ship me all of the kit of parts in pieces. Don't send me a flat pack of walls, trusses, and all that. They said, we are going to, when the winter kicks in, put, for the most part, Eskimo guys into a local building, and we're going to build and assemble and put people to work assembling our wall panels during the harsh winter months. And then when the construction season opened, they took our components that they assembled that were delivered by a barge, and they put up the apartment on their own. So our solution has, global reach. It works anywhere
you
in
could,
the world.
But you could have shipped all that in flat panels.
We sure could have. We could.
But then the Eskimos wouldn't have anything to do during
the
winter,
people didn't
right? Like that was.
Well, they would just
been drinking. Now they did some more work before they did the drinking.
Now they had something to celebrate at the end of the day.
But that's true. I said to the customer, I said, "We'll just assemble the robots and put it together." The guy's like, "No. We need labor. We need a project to do during the winter months." We said, "Great idea. Let's ship the."
And then that one also, you rotated the roof.
Yeah.
Yes, to save weight.
Yeah, we did. We flipped all it from a weak axis truss, which is to a strong axis truss, which took them and saved volumes by flipping the studs 90 degrees, okay, so that we could get more in a barge. So, you know, we've done some unique things like that.
Well, that's how you learn anyway. I mean, come on. That's how we all learn.
So there's a big phrase that when we're talking about industrial construction, a lot of people, until they see these things happen, don't really understand. They'll say it. Like, there's a lot of people out there talking about it, and it's hype. But it's designed for manufacture.
Yep.
So Dwight designed so it's manufactured efficiently. But then the Eskimo story and where he is now
put
on some of the models, you also designed for assembly. So designed for how you're going to manufacture and designed for how you're going to assemble.
So no assembly instructions were given. All the parts were numbered like, guess what, an IKEA home product, where everything is graphically assembled, meaning all the things are numbered. So you put 1 to 2 to 2 to 3 to 3 to 4. And you put an item number on it, and they just put it together with a box of screws that we said, this is the box for that product. And we didn't think it was going to work, but it did. That apartment is up.
But you'd have never known unless you did it.
Well, the interesting thing about never knowing is one night we had a police event at our factory. We thought we had a break-in, right? The alarm went off. It was a false alarm. The cops showed up, and it's a big factory. And they went walking through, and as soon as they walk in, they stopped. And I was like, okay, somebody must have broke in. These cops stopped immediately. Okay, because I'm walking with them to tell them which areas to go check and clear as the owner of the building. And I said, what are you guys stopping for? What's going on? They're like, what is going on in this room? I said, they said, is this like Star Wars? You know, again, March, again, here we go, May 4th, right? The May 4th. And then I said, they said, this is like an industrial part of Charlotte. All right. We're by the CSX rail station, right? Where this is the heart of the railroad, the district of Charlotte. And they stepped in, they see all these robots in there, and they're like, what did we just walk into? And long story short, they said, hey, can we come back and see this run one day? I said, sure, officers, come back in. So it's interesting that what goes on in your own backyard, which is how we met you, right? You say, look, let's show you what we're doing, which might be considered out of the box, right? And it's happening right here in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, and that the amazing thing is this is one of hundreds of corporations that are operating in Charlotte that no one knows. Charlotte's ginormous. Charlotte's a very wealthy city. It's got a lot of global and United States headquarters located in this area, and you're one of them. It's a great example.
Our biggest challenge is we don't send anyone to school to learn our skill trades. We just can't, right? Is how do we get the intellectual and human bodies to put into our business, because we can't go to school to learn what we do. So we have to grow our own employees.
Put tools in schools. Exactly what he needs. And that's what we're talking about. And that we'll talk about, believe it or not, we'll go there next hour. I promise you. Go figure. You're listening to About Your House on Fox Sports Charlotte. We're up against the top of the hour break. Download the free app. Stream us live. By far the best way to hear it. Your German friend could hear us on the app. No question.
I got a hold of him, but he was with a buddy in Barcelona, and he said we were too drunk to call in. So
okay.
We tried. I hear you. We tried.
Right? I
know. Okay. I said you're ready. Like you're ready.
You're probably loose and ready to go, bud. Yeah. Although he'd probably say some foul words, and we couldn't have that on air. You know, the button's too far time thing. Yeah, nah, it won't work. All right, we're going to take a top of the hour break here. We're talking industrial construction, new term. What's that all about? It's called metal studs. We're going to talk more about the components and how all this works, what you can do if you want to be involved, job opportunities, whatever. Come back next hour, number 3, right here on About Your House.
Come on back for the third hour as we learn more about construction, robotics, and the industry as a whole and what it looks like today. About Your House is brought to you by PutToolsInSchools.org, connecting students to tools of the trades, raising awareness of the many career paths. About Your House is also brought to you in part by Carolina Foundation Solutions, a licensed general contractor in North and South Carolina, from the hills to the coast. If you have a problem, they have a solution. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some time with us as we spread a little love. And now, here's your host, Ray Terry.
The older I get, the more I think. You only get a minute, better live while you're in it, 'cause it's gone in a blink. And the older I get, the truer it is. It's the people you love, not the money and stuff, makes you rich. And if they found a fountain of youth, I wouldn't drink a drop, and that's the truth. Funny how it feels, I'm just getting to my best years yet. The older I get, the fewer friends I have. But you don't need a lot when the ones that you've got have always got your back.
All right, welcome back. Hour number three, About Your House, talking industrial construction with Dwight Morgan of Offsite Tech and Charlie Dunn from DPR Construction. And DPR is, by definition, and a very commercialized builder. In other words, they do commercial industrial building, to clarify that. But I have a question for you, for both of you, actually. Okay, we got building standards. You got building codes. And, you know, in conventional construction, they come in at floor system, inspect. Framing, inspect. Insulation, inspect. Electrical, rough, inspection. Plumbing, rough, plumbing inspection. HVAC, rough HVAC inspection. Now, how many inspectors I done had in my building? You know, we ain't got the roof on yet. Now, you're telling me you're building a building in a enclosed environment. Where's the inspectors? How are you navigating through that aspect of it? Because I just went and took a bathroom break, and I was sitting there and said, whoa, we're missing something here. How are you navigating
through
that?
So, Dwight, I know where you're headed. Let me tee it up even a little bit better. So it's 2020. We're doing the JW Marriott here in Charlotte. What should have been a two-hour inspection was becoming a two-week delay because of the COVID protocol, time in the field, and it made us much more aware of this inspection in the field problem.
Right.
So that part of what you get out of the field with what Dwight is about to talk about is not just the physical work, but it's the travel and the inspectors to the field.
Well, yeah, I can see some great opportunity here.
But, yeah. So yeah. So how does inspection work?
But I
want
to see and I know you're dealing with it. There's
Absolutely.
No way you can.
Yeah, it's interesting because as this modular manufactured home initiative is taking hold in many states, each state has decided if they want to have a modular factory-built ordinance or rule book. North Carolina has one. So what North Carolina allows you to do is to build a factory like the one we have and then to build it to a certain standard, which means a quality manual has to be built up. We have to define what we do, how we do it, and how we measure success or failure. And then we have to have on staff licensed trades vis-a-vis journeyman electrician, journeyman plumbers, etc., And what they allow us to do is to hire a third-party auditing firm. So we use a company called NTA. Another one that's very popular is Intertech. And they will come in and audit our facility and say, are you doing everything in accordance to your drawings and according to your quality manual? And when they certify our factory, then the North Carolina building authorities say that we can put a sticker on our product saying it is factory inspected. And then when it goes to the field, the building inspectors acknowledge it and say it was factory installed. It was factory
installed. And they do a final on it.
And they would do a final
site
CO.
Final.
That is correct. A factory CO at that point. But they do not, but they forego the individual trades such as electrical, mechanical, insulation, framing, because that's done inside our facility. We then document that it was done accordingly. We stamp it and we put our seal on it. And that seal is based upon our certification received by, in this case, NTA.
Right. I got it. Okay. I got it.
Yeah. So we're inspecting in a dry factory as we build, instead of, as we know in construction, it's call in framing, call in
salvation. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it becomes 10 different trades and 10 different dates. That all can move because of weather and other projects that the inspectors
can't. Oh, yeah, and there are no holdups on it. That's a big advantage time-wise.
Yeah.
You know, no question.
No weather delays.
And I was just curious how – I mean, mobile homes are doing it. Manufactured housing are doing it. So I know you're doing basically the same thing, just in a different application.
Now, and what's really the most challenging is if we ship this particular product out of North Carolina, let's say it goes to – Texas,
building standards are different.
So then we have to negotiate reciprocity,
right,
with the North Carolina stamp, with the codes in Texas,
yeah.
And that's the only real administrative process that we have to go through, is to get them to pre-authorize that they will honor and respect the North Carolina stamp.
That would be a big holdup getting in Texas and saying that ain't gonna fly down here, bro. I'm sorry, we ain't. No, you. What's this mess you bring down here? You know.
Well, worst case, what we've done with other products from other states is you send an inspector there.
There, yeah.
They can review, and sometimes they'll have an adjustment.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, I want somebody to look at this and sign off.
Yeah, you fly them in.
So they look at your process, and then they say, okay, I approve this process, or maybe I want a couple things.
I got it.
And then that's a very common, like we do a lot of projects in California, and that's a very common thing. If you bring anything to California, or they make Texas, don't let friends in Texas, y'all just shut your ears right now. They make Texas look small fry.
Right.
When it comes to
it.
Not from here. And right. Part of that's a seismic. Like it makes sense.
Sure.
But so they'll travel their inspectors wherever it is and make sure it meets their standards, but then they'll accept that the factory, if it's being run the right way with the right discipline, that they're doing the things we want to have done.
And factory inspections are a good thing for those building inspectors, because think of this. Who wants to walk in a muddy job site?
Oh, no, there's
right?
so many.
Climbing up on a building.
You know, I've said many times after seeing a modular house and being under it and checking it out, by far better construction than your typical on-site construction. It's in a dry environment. Everything's controlled. I mean, you're getting dry materials and all that, you know. So in your case, same thing, you know.
Exactly.
Same exact thing, except it's steel, and it's a different methodology in construction, period, you know. So, you know, it's absolutely, to me, a no-brainer.
And the workers get to do their jobs at safe elevations. They're not up in the air. So instead of having to put a window in on the third floor of a three-story townhome, you know, some 30 feet up in the air, putting a window in, it's done at ground level in our factory.
And you can make flat panels out of all this, and it can be four stories high.
Yeah, we can go all the way up to seven stories with light gauge steel, which is what we use, with no augmentation of heavier structural steel.
Floor joist, everything.
Joist, roof truss, floor truss.
What do you use for decking? What do you use for sheeting?
So right now, we talked about out-of-the-box thinking, right? So
yeah.
If we're building a metal structure, it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense to put wood flooring, meaning decking, and wood sheathing on the outside, because what we just did is we took this argument of a termite-resistant structure and put termite food on the outside of it, meaning the sheathing.
Right, that's why I asked.
So we developed, we went to a roofing company and said, look, we think you have a great roofing product. It was made out of polyiso foam. Okay, it was a structural foam board that they use on commercial roofing projects. And we went to them and said, we think your product might work for sheeting on the walls. And their vice president of R&D said, we think so too. But we don't have any expertise in that, nor do we have a budget to go after approving that.
Yeah, you got to do R&D on it.
Yeah, so they said, how about this? You guys, meaning Offsite Tech, you do the testing. And if it works, we'll build it for you in our factory where we build all of the roof sheathing.
Sure.
Put your name, Offsite Tech, on it and only sell it for wall applications through you. So we did that, and we have our own sheeting product, which is a 4-in-1 product. It is an air barrier, a water barrier, thermal insulation, and structural sheathing, and all of it is inorganic. So it is not made out of any wood.
It won't off-gas.
It will not off-gas. It's a sustainable product, and more importantly, is its insulation and structure.
It's got our value.
Has an R value of 6 or 10, depending
really?
On what thickness we put in.
6 or 10. Now, you said what thickness is, so you're varying
an inch,
thickness.
An inch or inch and a half thickness is what we put out.
Whoa.
That's it.
You're talking about wall sheeting that's an inch and a half thick?
Yes. The new energy standards in the United States calls out for
that's
continuous insulation. They want the insulation to be put on the outside.
And air barrier.
And if you are in the southeast, you know, the humid climate zone.
Sure.
We learned something that we stumbled across, and that was, I said, why is it every time I go into Miami or I go into South Carolina, these brand-new houses after 6 months smell like musty?
Yeah.
Why do they smell musty?
I know why. But
and everybody said, it's the humidity. I said, but why does it smell musty? Because outside doesn't smell musty. It's just humid. And we learned about something that's interesting. If you take a hot, humid air environment in Charleston.
Anywhere, yeah.
And it's 90 degrees with 90% humidity. And then you have air conditioning running on the inside of your house, and it's running at 75. You're going from 95 to 75 through the wall.
Yeah.
So that temperature is going to go from 95 to 75.
What do you get
wall.
On heat
you
transfer?
You get condensation.
You get moisture every time.
And that moisture.
Hot air, cold air equals.
Sits inside your walls, and it equals mildew, mold. And it sits in the walls, and that's what you're smelling.
And that's exactly why you don't leave your house in the summer with the air conditioner turned off.
Yeah.
Totally. Or, Jack, because you will get residual smells and things going on.
So by putting...
Biology, involved there.
So by putting the insulation into our sheathing and putting it on the outside frame, we keep... what is referred to as the dew point, right?
Yeah,
that is
exactly.
The point of
hot air, cold air.
And that dew point is kept outside of your home and not inside the wall cavity.
You can relate to this, folks, on a summer morning. You get up. What's on the grass? Dew. Same thing happens in a structure.
Or fun fact, we just had this solar eclipse, and the last one that came through, I was down in Clemson in my parents' backyard watching it. And one of my nephews said, the grass is wet.
Yeah.
Even during that brief period of the eclipse, the dew comes.
So it's hot air, cold air, and it's just natural as anything in the world, and that's why we talk about crawl spaces a lot.
Exactly.
The moisture problems. It rains in crawl spaces. Why? We just told you why.
I had an architect come through my house. We were dealing with a crawl space problem, and he said, we like to joke that the crawl spaces might have been this really big practical joke put into the southeast by some northeastern architects.
Yeah.
Because you go in the northeast and you got basements or slabs.
Oh, you got basements.
Right?
Yeah,
people don't do it. They're like, what are these crawl space things?
But then you go far south and you don't have any crawl space. You got slabs.
Yeah.
So, it changes. I went to Florida and lived down there for 8 months in 82. And, wow, what an awakening. Oh, man, this is totally different. Block construction, tie beams, all that concrete stuff. But I learned a lot. And now I meet you guys. Oh, wow, we're going another direction.
Yeah, so if you look at your phone and look under the weather app and look for the word dew point. Every day has a dew point.
Everyone.
And when the temperature inside your walls get within 4 degrees of that dew point that day, you will have water inside your wall insulation, which you will then end up being mildew.
And then back in the 70s, some idiot, excuse me, came up with a new building code to put poly on the wall after the insulation. Where'd you grow up, boy? I mean, if that wasn't a dumb move, right?
Trap it inside.
You just trap moisture. You created problem. And they didn't take them long to figure that one out. A few years down the road, peel off the paneling, what you got? Mold, all behind the plastic.
Yeah, so we use mold-resistant materials such as the insulation. We also prevent mold by putting the dew point outside your building.
Right.
And by putting the insulation on the outside, we produce extremely energy-efficient buildings.
And you got something great to fasten the siding to.
Yeah. One of the things that we've learned is our 2,000-square-foot townhomes or single-family homes running all electric utilities, all electric heat pumps, all electric heating and lighting. The bills right now are coming back from our customers on or about $100 a month, which means it's okay to make an affordable house, but you also need to have one that's affordable to operate. And we focus on affordable operations as well.
Well, that's the whole concept behind, you know, the new building codes and all of the, you know, methodologies they're putting into construction today. We're building houses very, very tight. I use a reference to back in the 40s, post-war, those were dog crates. And we've migrated to Yeti coolers.
Yeah, good point.
You know, they're so tight now that we, well, actually, here we go again. We're learning all of our mistakes because we've never built that tight before, and we're dealing
now with. Now you have to bring makeup air in because they're too tight.
Exactly, they're too tight.
Air is too stale.
Air is too stale. You got to really pay attention to air quality and how you're going to treat that air, you know, and deal with it. And that's been a major issue. Matter of fact, we've got an environment. I'll save it for after the break. We got to take one right here. I've been told by the music. So let's take a break. We'll come back with more industrial construction. Welcome back. And, folks, if you don't want to call 227-8986, that's 704-227-8986. You can go on Facebook Live, which we're on right now, About Your House radio page, and comment or ask a question, which someone just did. So, Rishton, do you want to tell us the question?
Sure. Gray Child says, please ask Dwight about the safety of the facility. It has light barriers that prevent harm. Robots are assembling materials way safer than a simple red tape or a yellow caution tape we see on the typical construction site. Truly respecting the work and trying to extend the
community. Can I reply on that?
You
just
sure
minute?
Can.
I went to the factory to your point. Robots are protected. The whole plant's laid out with safety in mind. There's striped, there's yellow lines on the floor, there's white lines on the floor, there's designated areas for this, there's safety areas. Everything's mapped out according to safe, right?
Absolutely.
There are fences around certain pieces of equipment that you can't get to. It very, very safe. OSHA's got to be involved too. Can't forget them. Now can we? Right?
Absolutely.
So now take it.
So we use a lot of light curtain technology. And since it's the, may the force be with you, right? May 4th, Star Wars.
Thank you. Yes, like we did something important today, y'all. Okay.
May the force be with us.
I can feel the force right now.
Can you feel it?
Light side, baby.
So instead of having hard physical barriers between our robots and our workers,
right,
we believe in creating what we call a collaborative, cooperative environment, but it's got to be safe. These robots pick up, you know, really heavy pieces of items that can, they make it look like it's doing nothing. And obviously, if a person was to interact with the robot, it could get injured. So what we do is, instead of putting a big cage around the robot, we use light beams. And when a human being breaks that beam, the robot says, oh, you're getting too close to me. And we use a technology called Safe Move, developed by ABB Robotics, which tells a robot there's a human coming close to you, slow down. And what it does is it doesn't stop. It says, I'm going to slow down because somebody who doesn't necessarily know what's going on is getting too close. And then if you get too close, it stops. Okay? So, yes, we do use robot safety devices to make sure that our operators are what I call industrially safe, meaning OSHA, robot standards, robot industry of association standards.
Well, you've been operating since 2019. Anybody get hurt?
We reviewed our stuff recently because of DPR. They asked us to turn in all of our records for the last 3 years as a vendor, and we're happy to say that we've had zero lost time injuries, but we have had two very small injuries involving cut hands.
Oh yeah,
you know, we had a cut hand injury, but there were no industrial machinery or robotic injuries whatsoever recorded in any of our OSHA logs. All of them were hand getting cut by metal and other tools. That was it. And there were only two of them in the last 3 years.
Wow, Band-Aid injuries.
Yeah, Band-Aid injuries, no lost time.
Band-Aid. And you got to report Band-Aid injuries. I ain't going to slow down. Just give me some electrical tape. You got a caller, right?
Mark, yeah.
Is Mark on the phone? Let's talk to Mark. Mark left. Okay. Goodbye, Mark. Sorry. Patience. We can't just make it happen quick.
So let me jump in on top of what Greg, because I know Greg's been to see the facility. So maybe that's Mark coming back in. But, you know, Greg has the challenge in the field of people walking past safety barriers all the time. And I think that's what he's saying is now in this factory environment, you can guarantee the safety. It's not a possible.
Let's talk to Mark, see what he says. Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Doing good, Ray. How are you?
I am great. Do you have a question?
I do, and I don't know if y'all have already discussed this, but your guests, how does their product compare in price to say your typical stick built custom, you know, 3,000 square foot home? How does the cost compare on that?
That's a great question.
Are you going to save money? Is it going to cost you more because it's a better product? I mean, how? What's the pricing like? And I'll get off and listen.
Great. Thanks for calling, Mark. We appreciate it. Great question.
Thanks, bud.
Glad you asked it. All right. Take care. Have a great one.
Well, the price position of our products is a summation of three items, right? Supply chain, materials, and robotics. So if it's not just one area. So if you talk about the automation piece, we utilize, the best way to describe it would be Amazon worker type salaries to run our equipment, as opposed to skilled tradeswomen values, you know, where they might be making $100,000 a year. We're talking about factory labor costs, so therefore we're going to be less money than if we were going to stick build in the field, because we're using operator labor as opposed to skilled journeyman labor to run our internal equipment. So that's the first savings. The second savings is we are not sourcing materials through distribution. We're not going out to Lowe's or 84 Lumber to buy product that has already gone from the manufacturer. Like, let's say the manufacturer of a wood stud is a lumber, it's an actual lumber production facility. By the time it gets to Lumber 84, or Builder's First Choice, it's touched three or four hands. Each of those companies makes something. They make some profit. We buy direct from the source, and that produces approximately another 25% savings because we're not marking it up through distribution. We're buying from the factories that make roofing, the factories that make steel. We buy from the steel mill. We do not go to a distributor of steel studs. We make our own. And in that case, our price per square foot is considerably less, and I'm going to say considerably meaning double digits. I can't. Every project's a little different, but it's at least 20% less, and it lasts obviously a lot longer because it's not wood.
I hope we answered your question, Mark. I really do, but I can tell you.
Specifically, like the homes in Hickory were selling for.
We were selling them for $158 to $175. And these are 1,500 square foot homes. That's what we're selling them for. And we're making a profit doing it. And we do it every day.
Charlie here is going to build a house, aren't you? Isn't that what the plan was? Did I hear that one time?
Well, I'm ADU in the backyard. Yeah. And then eventually there's going to be some mountain land.
Yeah. So you're building an ADU in the backyard. Now, what's an ADU again?
Accessory dwelling unit.
Yep, accessory.
I just wanted to make sure people, because we're going to start using ADU. I like that. The ADUs. Got one of them in your backyard. What's that? That's a big doghouse for me.
Exactly. That's what I'm after. I got a creative daughter. I got a creative wife, which means I don't have a square inch of that house that's mine. Every room's got their stuff, right? So I'm gonna have an office that's my stuff.
You spend a lot of time at Michael's, huh? Yeah. Buying raw materials.
Yeah. I had a lady coach me up about my daughter. She says, your daughter's creative. That means you're going to have to let her have her mess.
And oh, yeah.
So she's got a room called her imagination room, but that wasn't enough because then she has
how
a quarter of the
she?
Kitchen. She's 19.
Okay, cool.
So,
I love
it. Yeah.
Cool.
Just got back from freshman year of college yesterday, so.
Okay.
Life flies, man.
It does. It don't stop.
Yeah.
But so the cost for that ADU is going to be significantly less with that product.
Yes.
So it is a savings. And I know it because you go in this factory and everything's there. The doors, the windows, the flooring, the plumbing, the electrical, the walls. I mean, every aspect of that house is in that factory, and it's not outsourced. You bring it in from?
The plumbing, the paint, the outside fiber cement, the brick veneers, whatever we use. We bring it in, and then we stage it, and we put it on the product before it leaves. Absolutely.
Gotcha. And you can either buy it palletized. I'll call it palletized. You say flat pack. Or you can buy it assembled in components. What do you call it?
Volumetric.
Yep. Volumetric.
Turnkey building.
Man, I learned all kinds of stuff today in terminologies. Wow. You know, we're going to – I love it. I really do. I'm blown away with it. And by the way, I went out to the Tiny House
Festival. I thought I saw you out there. I don't know what
– I didn't know. I didn't see you.
When you first walked in, did you see the great tiny house? That was ours.
I know what
your house
was.
He's got a picture of it up.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And his little promo thing.
I did that. We got a caller. Gray?
Uh-oh.
Oh, is this Gray?
Yeah.
Okay. Is this a German guy?
No.
Another guy. Okay.
This is Texas.
It's a Texas guy.
Oh,
Mississippi,
this is a Texas
Mississippi
guy.
Come Texas, yeah.
Okay, well, y'all.
Mississippi car dealer.
All right. Let's talk there, Rishton. Good morning, sir. How are you? Appreciate you calling in.
Hey, great to be here. Appreciate the opportunity. I'm nervous to be talking to three such great guys this morning, but... I could not help but weigh in a little bit on what you guys are doing. I've been to Dwight's factory. I know Charlie really well. We had met a few days ago, and just the thing I wanted to talk about, and Charlie can expound on this. I'll hang up and prompt him and then hang up, let him talk about this, is why we have to do this in construction. This is a math problem. Whether we know it or not, right now we have a math problem in construction. Where for every seven people who walk out that door, who've got a little gray in their hair and walk out that door, we're getting one back.
I know.
And the kind of technology that Dwight is bringing in, the kind of programs that you're doing to have it, try to get people into this business are the right kind of programs. It's a math program. Charlie helped come up with this idea called the productivity gap, and he can explain it better than I can. But y'all keep doing what you're doing. This is a great program. What Dwight's doing is fantastic. And also asking about making his own screws. The man's phenomenal.
All right.
Y'all have a great one, guys.
Hey, thank you, Gray. Appreciate you calling in, man. Have a good weekend.
Well, and actually hearing Gray reminded me of the second project that Offsite Tech helped DPR with. Gray was literally in this. I tell people I've got, through a life, I've accumulated a lot of different skills. But I really only have one talent, and that's serendipity. Like serendipity, I sat next to you
right,
at
sure.
Lancaster. Yeah. Serendipity.
I have a lot of that.
I was taking a fellow with Dassault Systems, so the tech that builds airplanes, for example, through Dwight's facility. And 10 years ago, he tried to do something similar, and he looked at me and was like, Charlie, I cannot believe this is here and how awesome it is. But while walking that facility, Gray called in. He's like, Charlie, don't you have somebody in North Carolina's got line of sight on some steel? We've got 20-foot King studs. They're going to be 16 weeks late. And what that means is the whole project's going to go on pause for 16 weeks.
Oh, you got an answer for that one.
I asked Dwight. 5 days later, Dwight shipped those King studs to Texas. They ended up finishing 2 weeks before they were scheduled to start. I walk out there, and this big, burly superintendent, all 100% Texan through and through, gets up and just about squeezed the life out of me, give me a hug. Because those studs made it his project on time.
That's awesome.
So it's that flexibility to a supply chain to own the steel. But now back to this math problem. And I talk about it this way. I got a small but very important personal reason I do what I do, but a very big reason I do what I do. And the very big reason is this. In 2017, there's a study by the United Nations. It said, hey, this is how much stuff we've built around the world from the start of construction era till now. From 2017 to 2060, we're going to need to double that.
Yeah.
And that's infrastructure, rebuilding buildings that have to come down, building new buildings.
Yeah, I was going to say, to build that many buildings, the infrastructure under it is a critical factor.
Right. But to make that very real and tangible,
yeah.
I like going to New York City. Often I'll stay on the Jersey side because we do pharmaceutical projects on the Jersey side. But you look out of that New York City skyline. Awesome.
Yeah.
The math to double construction in the world from 2017 to 2060 means we need a new New York City every 40 days.
Wow.
It's not going to happen if we keep going the way we're going. But the things like Dwight is doing, robotic assembly, bringing women into the workforce, and Gray, I hear you on seven walking out, one walking in. That math does not account for.
Yeah.
If we bring women into the workforce at a 50% ratio, the math actually works. We're seeing studies now. It's just people have never thought we could do that, so they never wanted to consider bringing women in the workforce. But with what Dwight's doing, we could do that. And then you get it to site, and instead of a week or two on a framing package, it's an hour.
Yeah.
Like all this math starts to turn in our favor as we enable this technology. And then the other part of it is now we've got a chance, like construction becomes cool again.
Yeah, and think about the math problem in simple terms. I come to your house, and I want to – You want to make dinner for me. So I bring two people, right? We come over, greatest dinner you've ever made, Ray. I said, you know what? I'm coming back next weekend. I'm bringing 1,000 people. You can't make dinner the same way.
Nope.
So you can't. So that's really what we have to do in construction is, because we have such an uphill climb on quantity, we've got to do things differently out of the box, because cooking breakfast or dinner the same way for two does not work for 1,000.
Or 50,
right?
Yeah.
Or even
you're
50.
Right, yeah, I know.
And that's what we're trying to do, is to re-engineer and transform the process in construction along with the materials.
Got it. You know, I want to clarify something, then I'm going to ask a question about screws, okay? All right, you know, we talk about robotics. Well, let me back up here a minute. I got to come back to this, but I'm so engrossed in our topics today that I have not made my announcements. That I need to do that, okay? So I'm going to stop here a minute and mention a few things to you. One thing I want to mention out of the gate here is, you know, we talk about robotics, and there are a lot of career and opportunities and pathway in robotics, and there's an organization in town called Queen City Robotics Alliance. And I visited their little clubhouse last year and was absolutely blown away, and Dwight's been involved in it in another city or something.
Correct, yep.
And in the past too, and it's Queen City Robotics Alliance, and they're going to have a summer camp for kids, and the cost is $320 for one student, which for 9 days workshop, that's dirt cheap for what your kid's going to get. Now, so I bring this up because if you need something for your children to do this summer, you know, and beyond in the school year, and I was talking to Dwight here about sponsoring a possible high school to get into Queen City Robotics, because it's the same thing as put tools in schools. Same thing. I mean, they're learning technology, teamwork, life skills, like unbelievable, and they love it. And a kid won't get involved and stay there unless he loves it. He'll be out the door. This ain't for me. And he's gone. But I'll tell you something. Those kids that are involved. So that's Queen City Robotics Alliance. They were on the show last year. I'm going to have them on again. There's a tremendous opportunity for kids to learn so many things. So I just want to do that little plug there. And just Google Queen City Robotics Alliance, and you'll get the facts. If you got students, and just check it out. And I talk about NARI, the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, a great deal on the show here, because it's a great way to network if you're in the remodeling business. And after all, this is a show called About Your House. So let's tie it in a little bit. You want to? So the NARI meeting's May 23rd. That's Thursday, May 23rd at 5:30 to 8:30 at Cocentino. But go on NARICharlotte.com, and you'll register if you want to go there. It'll cost a little bit, but don't everything. Mama, I Don't Want to Go to College event coming up May 18th, Saturday, from 10 till 1 at the Sugar Creek Rec Center. Put that on your calendar for your students to get involved. Check out. Go. Take your kids. Hey, you go. You may want to jump ship out of corporate America and jump into the trades. Well, there's an opportunity right there to do so. That's Mama, I Don't Want to Go to College. May 18th, Sugar Creek Rec Center. And don't forget, we talked earlier to William Ward, GoFlexi.com. And I want to talk about one event. I went last week with a few other Put Tools in Schools board members to the Union County Construction Automotive. Excuse me, let me back up. Construction and Automotive All-Star Celebration. I met a lot of high school students that are in the trades that are career ready right out of high school. Man, I thank you for your invite. I really appreciated showing up and attending the event. Met some great kids, great futures ahead of them. And part of the purpose for Put Tools in Schools is to create, as we move forward, create resources for these kids, students in high schools, anywhere, to be a resource for them, to know who has the apprenticeship programs, internship programs, the job opportunities in the trades around plumbing, electrical, heating, and air, and off-site tech. You know, there's so many opportunities out there, and hopefully Put Tools in Schools can be a connector. And that's our goal, essentially, and to raise the awareness of the opportunities. And we're growing. We got a new website coming up next month, and when it's up online, we're going to go full blast ahead and get into schools around the surrounding counties in Southwest District 6 in the North Carolina education system. That's 9 counties. So we can't do it without industry. Industry must step up, but we're going to give you ways you can do that. So that's it for today. Although we do have some events coming up. Rocky River High School's got an event coming up May 21st, and Union County got an email on that last week, May 22nd. There's a high school, I think it's Monroe High School, is going to have an event down there. Please call me, reach out, info@puttoolsandschools.org if you want any information, and we'll make it happen. So there you go. And our guest today, off-site tech, Dwight Morgan. What's your position there?
I'm a co-founder and the chief manufacturing officer.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
I build stuff.
What's that?
That means I build stuff.
Oh, you know, and I know what I was going to talk about. I was going to the robotics here, but I'll get to that in a second. Pull up offsitetech.com. That's OFFSITEK.com. Offsitetech.com. Who came up with that name?
You know, my business partner and I came up with it. We started out with a different name, and we started out with the name of Precision Prefab.
Right.
But at that time, the world viewed prefab as maybe not a great thing, right?
Yeah, prefab did have a cheaper connotation
exactly.
to it, you know.
So we decided to go after off-site technology, which is what we are,
That's
right?
What
off-site
you are,
construction
yeah.
technology.
Great stuff. You know, we're talking about robotics, and you might think of, and this is where I was, well, I got to take a break. So let me talk and see if I can remember that when I come back. But I want to talk about the robotics in the plant. It's not what we might you might think after hearing our conversation, and I will explain that when we get back. It doesn't have to have an arm on it to be a robot. That's what we're saying. There's other automation involved with some of that equipment that doesn't look like robots, but in actuality, they are, especially when you put a roll of steel on one end and a stud pops out on the other end, pre-measured, pre-cut, holes in it where electrical needs to go and all the stuff. Pretty amazing stuff. That is a robot. We'll be back.
Don't come around here no more. Whatever you're looking for. Hey! Don't come around here no more. Let me run with you tonight. I'll take you. Someone I used to see, but she don't give a damn for me. Well, let me get to the point. Let's roll another joint and turn the radio to laugh. I'm too alone to be proud, and you don't know.
Welcome back.
For a minute.
Golly, we got 10 minutes, guys. That's all we got.
Where's the time gone?
The quickest 3 hours of your week, wasn't it? Yep. You know, we're talking about robotics and, you know, about this plant. And there are only two armed robotics robots in the plant, isn't it? Two or three?
Four.
There's four now?
Yeah.
Okay. There's four. So you got four, I call them armed. They have appendages, and they swing and stuff. But also, there are, like I said before the break, there are other machines that produce the steel and the, you know, the components, the studs, the floor joists, all these things that come literally in rolls of recycled metal, and they're all produced by machines, which are basically robots.
Agreed.
it, you know, because they have to be programmed. They, and like I said, you put the big old, I got a question too, those big roll handlers, you know, handle yes. a roll of metal, and they, the metal comes off, goes through a machine, comes out the other end. Like I said, it's done. And it's like got a number on it, basically.
Agreed.
And it goes to a certain place, and then, you know, it's screwed together. Speaking of screws,
you know,
how do you make your, how did that come to be?
Well, Charlie knows what I feel about screws, because all of our studs are fastened together using screws. We don't use nails in our process because we're not using wood. And Charlie would come to the factory, and he'd see me pick up a screw off the ground, one screw, and I'd get all upset, and he'd be like, what are you getting upset about? I says, well, he says, it's a safety issue because someone's going to slip on
sure.
it, right? And I said, also, it's also money. And somebody said, what do you mean?
Remember, he's frugal.
So we realized that we use somewhere around 25,000 fasteners per home. And when we were going to buy fasteners locally in the U.S., from distribution like Lowe's and Home Depot, we found out that they were running us about 10 cents a piece.
Right? Really?
And these are, you know, structurally strong. They've got corrosion resistance on it so that they don't, you know, rust over time.
Can we hit stop there sure. 1 second about screws? I learned something at a shed build competition. You can't screw with 3-inch regular old carbon steel screws. You can't use them in framing. They won't pass.
Yeah, these are structurally
that's why I brought it up, passes. Because you have to use structurally qualified, approved
exactly.
screws.
That have certain structural strength and
right.
also corrosion resistance so they don't fall apart over time. So when we started looking at it, we said, you know what, we're like a banker that says, listen, don't give out an extra penny every time you're at the teller, because if you do it a million times an extra penny costs a lot of money when it adds up. So we go through millions of screws. So we decided, let's go all the way back to the screw companies. And honestly, fasteners in the United States is not a market that really exists. It's like shoes. You don't make too many shoes in the U.S. I think the only shoe company that might be left that makes in the U.S. might be New Balance. Very much like fasteners. So most of them are made in Taiwan and China. So we went to those sources and said, hey, you build for these construction companies in the U.S. and you sell them retail. How about you just make for us? But we want them a little different. We need them to be robotic friendly, okay? And what does that mean? Open up the hood of your car, look in the hood, and look at all those fasteners under the hood. They've got really weird shapes to the heads. They've got Torx heads to them.
Yeah, they're right? all kind of different things.
And that's because it works best in manufacturing equipment as opposed to hand drivers when you put these Torx drivers on it. So we went and found out that we could save 10 times the cost by buying direct from the manufacturer on each screw. So, yeah, our screws cost us a penny and a half versus 10 or 11 cents, but it all adds up.
Oh, my God, that's a big chunk of change.
So it all adds up to the affordability of the house, because if I can save $2,000 a house in fasteners,
oh my, that's
guess what I can do with it? No, I don't have to put it in my pocket as profit. I can offer upgraded windows. I can offer better appliances, better flooring, so that at the end of the day, this affordable house is one that's going to last because it's got quality products in it, because I saved money on screws that nobody on this station is ever going to see. It's behind the walls, but you're going to see your refrigerator. You're going to see your flooring. You're going to see your paint. So let's take that savings in fasteners and put them into things that the customer touches and sees every day.
Right. That's awesome. Amazing. Now, one other question I have is roofing. One size fits all? Are you using asphalt, using metal, or both, or maybe this?
We use both. It depends on the architectural look and also the pitch. So a lot of the manufactured homes leave with a slant shed roof,
right? Yeah.
And that doesn't work well with asphalt. You know, you need to have a pitch of about a 4.5-12 to shed the rain and the snow. If the pitch is flatter, we then go with raised metal seam roofs for the what they call the more contemporary looking
sure.
roofs are going to be metal roofs, and that's what we use. So we use
well, metal. My thought on it would be the metal roofing is more sustainable, it more structural. I think
lasts longer.
Might be wrong.
Lasts
a lot longer. I found out last week that hail can damage metal just as bad as it damages asphalt too. But regardless.
Yeah.
you know. And but all these things are fastened not to wood. It's all metal to metal if it's a metal roof.
And we have a new product that we're bringing in on the metal roof side, which is unique. It's a metal roof panel that has an inch and a half
closed
cell polyisofoam built into it so that when it goes in, guess what? We're putting the insulation now above the deck as well as in the cavity of the roof. So it is an integrated metal roof with insulation laminated together at the factory. Very, very unique product.
Amazing. So as you move forward, you're getting more and more upgrades just by virtue of doing it.
Yeah, we call ourselves a fast iteration company. People look at that and says, you guys are changing all the time. Construction doesn't change all the time. The answer is, listen, you have to be a company willing to try new things, learn by the failure. Don't get bogged down in the failure and say, I'll never do that again.
Oh, no. That's how you learn. I keep saying failure is a good thing.
Yeah, you be a lifetime learner, and we try new things. Yeah, we fail sometimes, but you know what? We learn from those failures, apply them to the next time we try it, and we don't make the same mistakes. So I tell my people everything. You can make a mistake every day. Just don't make the same one you made last week.
Well, at every job I ever do with players, you know, team members, associates, whatever, people, and we mess up, I pull everybody aside and say, what did we learn?
Yeah.
What did we learn? If we don't learn anything from this screw-up, we're crazy. We've got to talk about it and learn from it.
And the answer can't be, we learned never to try that again.
No. Why did we do it?
This is an important point about this difference between offsite construction and industrial. Come back to where we started. Dwight knows what his baseline standard is. He calls it tack time, which comes from manufacturing. So he knows what they should be doing. So he knows, is there something to learn here?
Right.
And then when he goes to try something new, because he has that baseline standard, he knows he's doing something new, and is he going to be smarter or not smarter?
Okay, guess what? We're out of time. I didn't even know it until I turned around and saw coming up on 59. So we got to get out of here. Thank you, man.
It's been a great morning.
Yeah, this has been a lot of information, and I want to come out next week. Are you in town?
We will. We'd love to have you out.
I'd like to get my vest.
I will. And let's talk about Queen City Robotics.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've got a lot to talk about. Thank you both. Offsitetech.com. You want more information? There you go. It's all there. And go spread some love. I tell you who's going to be on next week, but I can't remember what's next week.
Speaking of love, if you're struggling with what your purpose is in life, come join us in construction. We need all the help we can get.
Good point.
Yeah, you can call Offsitetech for a job opportunity. And next week we're going to talk gardening. Gardening. It's that time of the year. Really, that past it. Wait, it's getting hot. Go spread some love, folks. Get it out there. Spread some love, find a child, a mentor, and just have a great week. We'll see you back right here next week with more about your house. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.